Good afternoon, everybody. It's a deep honor to call to session our City Commission of the City of Winter Park, February 9th, 2015, in our great city, a rainy day, but hopefully there's sunshine in this room as well as in our hearts today. I would invite you to silence your phone, stand with me as our meeting is called to order, and our friend, Reverend Allison Herity of the St. Richard's Episcopal Church, will lead us in prayer. Reverend, our earth needs peace, doesn't it? For sure.
So, we need peace.
Hopefully that in your prayer you'll accompany that throughout our world. It seems like there's a lot of different challenges. Then please remain standing as we have a Pledge of Allegiance. Reverend.
Let us pray. Our good Creator God, in your word, you have given us a vision of a holy city to which all the nations of the world bring their glory. Behold and visit, we pray, this city. Renew the ties of mutual regard which form our civic life, that protect us, and not only protect us, but that enliven our lives, enrich our lives, and make them better. Continue to send us honest and able leaders. Enable us to eliminate poverty, prejudice, and oppression, that peace may prevail with righteousness and justice with order, and that all from different cultures and with differing talents may find with one another the fulfillment of their humanity in this time and in this place. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend, and for being here and all the good you do in our community. We certainly appreciate it. Commissioners, unless Mr. Knight has any changes, Mr. Knight, anything from staff? I'd accept an approval of the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. I'm going to go down and have Dave Zusi join me as he presents a special award our city has received. Tell us about this. This is another wonderful recognition, not just for the staff, but for the excellence of your department.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners and audience. I'm always really happy when we receive an award, not just because it's an award that shows that we're doing a good job, but in this particular case, it was an award from the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and they are pretty much the regulatory agency that manages the quality and quantity of the water for our state, and they award one award for three different categories in the entire state, and we received one for the Large Community Water System Award for our Magnolia Water Plant, and I want to thank Dennis Dudot and Gary Heller, my staff associates who do an amazing job every day, and this is why we receive this award. Thank you.
While I have the floor, I do want to express congratulations this Friday evening at our Winter Park Chamber Awards celebration. Our own Commissioner Tom McMacken was named Volunteer of the Year, very appropriate, and it was great. Tom, I know, is a very humble man. He won't tell you, but I think he's volunteered something like 25 years for our Fall Arts Festival, and that's a wonderful event for our city. He enjoys doing it, I know, Tom, but congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank you, sir.
And then also, the Chamber often represents or recognizes a staff member or team of our team and Steve Mathis of our building. And I guess, is that Public Works Department? Or
yes.
Public Works Department was recognized. We thank Steve for all he does. Obviously, he keeps our buildings alive, and when our buildings are kept going well, that means the wonderful activities that occur in our building, such as our chamber, other activities can occur, the library, everywhere else. So that was a wonderful recognition, and I was honored to be there and recognize Tom as well as Steve. That concludes my report. We'll go to the city manager's report.
One item, I sent out an email notice last week, but I wanted to let the public know that the city did receive the grant to do quiet zones throughout the city. So we'll be working with the Department of Transportation to get that contract. There'll be an agreement, a LAP agreement, coming before the commission here in the next few weeks, we hope, and we can get that project moving.
Randy, that's scheduled, I think, for the second phase of Sunrail. Am I correct, or might they do that in between?
Don's out here. It'll happen. We'll start it this year, right?
We'll start it this year? That's great news. That's even better news. Thank you.
What's the state budget for that from
The state share for our project is like $1.1 million. There's some change there, but the city budget is $700,000, and then we have some leftover money from the train station that's doing part of the project. So it's over a $2 million project altogether.
And Randy, what did the state budget statewide?
$10 million, I believe it was. So we got $1.1 out of the $10 million
Did we hear from our friends in Maitland? Because I know
they got it.
So yes. It's the quiet zone
got it.
I think at Sand Lake can go all the way at least to the Seminole County.
That's right. So the cities on both sides of us got it. So we shouldn't. You got to have really good ears to hear it blowing up.
And it's also my understanding that there is still additional funds that may be available, so Seminole County may be able to.
It's going
to
be a second round of handing in
from the current budget. I mean, the current budget allocation. Tom, and, I'm sorry.
I was going to finish up. Can you just remind me how many stops or how many crossings we're talking about in Winter Park?
Well, we have 13, 14 crossings. I think this does work on 9 or 10 of them, Don.
At least.
Right, some of them are already quiet zone eligible now. I mean, you know, so they don't all need work, but
okay. Thank you.
So won't we be the first in the state to get all this done? I mean, we were the first out of the box to get this.
Yes, I mean,
so,
I think.
Well, I just think you need to take a little credit because this is a big deal. And it really is. And we've had a lot of people that need to understand how important this is that you were able to make this happen.
This will be big. Yes,
very good.
Thank you,
Commissioner Mackin. You're recognized,
sir. And while we're on the subject of Sunrail. And I just want to clarify a little discussion we had last week on the railroad crossings. Commissioner Leary asked that there were two levels of crossings, one that we were going to be able to do the concrete, precast concrete crossing to, and the other ones we were going to do asphalt. And I believe Commissioner Leary, and one of the descriptions about that was the slopes going up to the rails were too steep to allow the concrete. And Commissioner Leary asked the question, well, if we own the right-of-way, could we lessen the slope to allow that to happen? And I wasn't clear on the answer on that, because I would certainly be on the page of saying if we can do whatever we need to do at those other, I'll call them B-rated crossings, to bring them up to an A rating, I would be willing to discuss that with my fellow commissioners.
The two that are too steep for the concrete panels is Canton. It just comes up too much at high grade there. You'd have to regrade the road, and I'm not sure. I haven't looked at all the driveways that are adjacent to that.
I would still like to know if that.
Okay.
The other one is
Minnesota Avenue on the south end. So.
I would personally just like to know what that, in a breadbasket kind of number, what that would entail, because if we're doing it, I would certainly like to know what the number is to actually do them all and do them right.
We can look into that.
I think part of that question too, Commissioner, was a legal question in regards to who had the rights to do that across the right of way. And I know, Bill, you weren't here at the time. Larry was here. But is it within our rights to feather that out and kind of work with DOT to make this happen?
I would imagine that we would. I'm sure that we would have to make sure that it did not impact during the project. Obviously, that's just common sense. But also, we would want to check that the easement relationship between the city of Winter Park and the railroad to make sure that we would have the right that would not interfere with I mean, it's our right of way, and they have an easement on our right of way for
we didn't interrupt service, you think?
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to probably want an LOS, level of service agreement, or something like that.
Great.
I don't want to go to the engineering level of that, but just kind of what would be, from a scope standpoint, what would be involved in doing that, so we may be able to discuss that. I'll bring it up.
And see if we can get a price for the remaining two that are not getting concrete panels, but the other ones are getting.
Yes, which is great, because those are I cross those in downtown Orlando all the time. And
I hear you yelling actually when you drive.
If we could get the documents that would pertain to the relationship between the railroad and the city, that way we can look at those and make sure that that's part of the feedback that we give back to the commission at that time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the questions of Mr. Knight. Randy, we closed on the property abutting Maitland.
Yes.
Which is for park, and then we closed on the 2600 Lee Road.
Property, right.
So those are closed.
The 2600 Lee Road is scheduled to come down at 11:30 a.m. this coming Wednesday. If you'd like to come out and join us to watch the bulldozer pull through.
Awesome. Good. Did you bring that other machine that Commissioner McMackin and the mayor have been waiting to see
what they're doing?
Yeah.
This demolition has the opportunity for us to have lots of different comments that would certainly get in Mr. Freeman's paper, so we'll choose not to.
I do have a question, Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
Randy, I noticed that in your write-up it said we were going to put it on the market right away.
Yes.
Have we worked through a way to make sure we take care of the billboard?
I had a meeting with Katie Rushman this morning. We talked about that, and we have a plan in
place. So we're not going to sell it until we know we've handled that.
We'll handle it properly within
the
sale.
Do we have to do a notice of disposal, or did we do that as part of the...
We do not. We'll have to have you surplus the property once we acquire it, but you don't technically have to do a notice of disposal.
Okay.
That's required under Chapter 163 in your CRA.
Right.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Knight? Mr. Reichman, I don't know if you have anything from the...
You stole my thunder about 2600.
No, I didn't mean to.
Shoot. But no, nothing further.
Okay. Questions of the city attorney?
No, sir.
Hearing none. Mr. Hamill, financial report for December, which is a three-month report.
Mayor Commissioner, have the financial report for the first quarter of our new fiscal year. Taking a look at our general fund to start, we have already received a lot of our tax revenue. It's that time of year. And our building permits are not quite as strong as they were last year, but they're still on track with budget. Investment earnings are looking good. Departmental expenditures are in line with budget. You notice the transfer out number at the bottom of the page is larger than it has been in the past, and that's because we took $1 million out for the purchase of the 2600 Lee Road property. Moving over to the CRA statement, the CRA has already received its tax increment revenue from the city and the county. That happens in December each year. Moving on to the water and sewer. Our sales there are a little bit behind our forecast, but we're keeping an eye on that. It's not, doesn't look like it'll be too impactful at this point. Bottom line is strong, $662,000. Debt services coverage is strong as well, over 2x. Moving to the electric statement. Electric sales are also a bit behind, and we're monitoring that.
Wes, do we budget seasonally, or do we just take?
It's seasonal. Yes,
do we just
is.
Take when we budget?
No, we look at the.
Do we look at it by month, or do we just take it divided by 12?
No, we don't just divide by 12 because we've got a good history, and the it's pretty predictable as to when the heaviest kilowatt hour uses occur during the year.
Wes, and this may be somebody else's answer, but I saw when Jerry did the follow-up on the electric fund, was able to explain, well, gee whiz, we've had X amount of days that we've been over a certain temperature and whatnot, and we haven't, you know, there's a reason that we may be behind from an electric standpoint. We've been behind on water pretty routinely. Is that, Randy, is that just... Going forward, we're going to be adjusting to say we're 2-3% behind to that, or that's been a fair. Yeah, the electric, I understand. Yes, we've been warmer than normal, and
yeah, there is a tremendous amount of conservation that has been taking place to seeing a decline in the gallons used, but it is also very weather driven. If you have any type of a drought, your water usage spikes. If you have a wet summer, it really is low. I mean, it is also very weather driven, related to the amount of rainfall.
Okay. And we adjusted our forecasted water sales backwards in 15 from what we forecast for 14. But it's still a little behind. It came back last year. We came very close to our forecast at the end of the year.
That's because I put a new sod.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Our fuel cost in the electric fund are for the first quarter, we were over covered by about $635,000. That brought our fuel cost stabilization fund to about $1.2 million, which is right at the midpoint of the newly adopted range that you set at the first January meeting. Our debt service coverage is strong there, well over 2 times. And lastly, we have the investment report outlining our holdings at December 31. We have everything is in compliance with our investment policies, and we have a blended rate of about 1.26%. And that's the highlights.
Great.
Of our
questions
report.
Of Mr. Hamill or Mr. Knight?
No, sir.
No, sir.
I'd seek a motion to accept the report as presented, please.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Thank you, Mr. Knight. Thanks to the staff for all that they do to manage our tax fund so well. 7B, I'm not sure if you're going to kick this one off, or Michelle.
I'm going to ask Michelle to come forward. We've provided you, at the commission's request, information about the three professional services that the commission asked about. So in your packet, we have provided the scope of services for those. And that was the state lobbyist, the city attorney, and the labor attorney. Michelle can walk you through those documents, or we can just answer questions, whatever the pleasure of the commission is.
And Michelle, once you looked at this, you felt like our retainer was very fair. And this idea that we have for looking at litigation as it comes forward, are you comfortable that that's the best approach to take?
Well, I think that that's definitely an improved approach. And the retainer is in line with the retainer that we had with the previous city attorney. And when you look at each city in the area, they all do it kind of differently. You know, some will have a retainer that includes 2 hours, and then, you know, the clock starts ticking. Some include commission meetings only, and then the clock starts ticking. And so they're all very different, but this is in line with what we've had, two attorneys now. And
I saw the list of litigation. The only question I had, you were recommending a process by which we would kind of get a heads up before we started to litigation,
right,
what it might cost. The only question I have is I'm not sure you want to do that on every single one, only because that requires man hours to accomplish. And when I looked at the list of litigation, out of the 18, 14 of them were under $10,000. So I don't know, you might have a threshold in mind that
right.
We only deal with things over 10,000, or that would have only been three. Things over 50,000 would have only been one. So it's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to add workload unnecessarily to something we're trying to curb the hours on.
Right, and
well,
I think it was
10 cases at $185 is $1,800. If it took them an hour to estimate, that would be the best money you ever spent, Commissioner. I don't think that you ever not want to estimate the cost of litigation. I appreciate this proposal. I think it's 5 years too late from Brown Garganzi, to be honest. I think that we need to really look at this in depth and implement this now, and I'm still believe that we need to do an RFP for these contracts just to make sure that we're getting the fairest price as well as the best service for these three contracts that we have today. You know, I think we always need to watch when we litigate, not just because litigation is expensive, but also because is it going to achieve ultimately what we want as a city? An unlimited litigation budget gets you, guess what?
Unlimited litigation.
So.
Well, and the other piece of this, can we ask questions?
Yes, by all means.
The thing that I see when I look at this is I understand what we're paying $450,000 for, but I still don't have a comparison with anybody else because we have an RFP, the process. And so whereas people may say it depends on this or depends on that, I got all that. But the RFP process starting from scratch does give you an equal place for everybody to look at, and that's one of the things that at least we have the scope now, so an RFP process would be relatively easy to do from there. But we don't have any comparison to what someone else pays, really, because we've just got what we pay. And so I don't see that giving me information about what other people are paying.
Oh, you didn't share that.
No, we had that before, but the reason this came back, ladies and gentlemen, is because we didn't have any specifics in the scope. So this is the scope that tells us what we're getting. Am I not right there?
That's what we're getting and what we want.
Yes. Okay, so this tells us what we're getting, but we don't know what somebody else gets. That's what we've said all along. We don't know what they ask for in Apopka. We don't know what they ask for in Maitland. We don't know what they ask for somewhere else. We only know what we are asking for in Winter Park. And so I'd like us to look at the scope as a way of us starting to have a baseline data of what we want to do. We're spending $450,000 right now, and we spend every bit of it. And so is that the right amount of money we need to be spending in Winter Park for litigation and for services like that?
And, Commissioner, I don't know, but at $281,000 as a retainer, I don't know if you know, some cities retain their own in-house counsel. I don't know if that's the best thing to do or not. There's probably pros and cons to that. But at $281,000, you probably could be pretty close to doing that.
Well, I just think we need to look at it. So it's a big ticket item for us to have without letting it be competitive at some point.
Well, I think if we go back and we look, you'll have to help me. I may have it here, but it seems like our state lobbyist and our labor attorney have been on contract for quite a while, haven't they? Well, the labor attorney since 1970.
Yeah, and the state lobbyist in 2005.
Well, you know, it's a real struggle because to me, the basic relationship between an attorney and a city or a individual client is an issue of trust and long-term relationships, and I think that is important, and I can see how over the years we have kept attorneys, and I feel very comfortable continuing on with that process. I like the idea of getting upfront estimates on litigation. That makes sense, but when I look at our litigation, the major litigation was for the billboards,
yes.
And we had many executive sessions on that, and it was the commission that made the decision to continue to pursue. So from my point of view, I'm comfortable with that. And I'll tell you, Sarah, this was kind of something that surprised me. In addition to comparing with other cities, what we received from staff was a comparison with other cities. I thought it would be interesting to compare it with ourselves. So I collected data for the last 10 years, back to 2005, of litigation expense. And if you go back to 2006, before Brown was with us, the litigation number was $399,000. So I went in and pulled the escalators for legal services and both the PPI and the CPI, and when you apply either one of those numbers to the cost of litigation in 2006, it actually is higher than what we paid this year. So from my personal perspective, I feel very comfortable that we have a relationship of trust and success with both our city attorney, our labor attorney, and certainly our state lobbyist. So I'm quite comfortable not bidding this out. I do want to review performance every 5 years. I think that's critical.
Yeah. And Commissioner, you did state a few years ago that 5 years out, you thought it was a good idea. So obviously you've changed your point in that point. So,
well, no, I think it is important that we review. We should all do a review of him just like we do a review of Randy.
But you didn't mean every five years, you mean every year, right?
You said bid it out. But that's okay. It's okay. We can change our opinions. I want to see if there's three to bring. This is a non-action item. I'd like to see three heads to bring it to an RFP at our next meeting for discussion as an RFP that we would go forward with these three contracts. I have one shaking head.
You
I think it's time to do that. Is there a second, third head?
Second. Mr. Mayor, I'm not sure I'm there yet. I'd like to see a comparison of other what other cities get for with their attorney services. I don't think that's here. I think we're missing that.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
And that's the only thing that I'm missing. So I'd like to see that portion of it. Michelle, I'd like to see what services are offered to other.
So sort of the scope of work from other cities, Maitland's scope of work compared to how much they pay, Apopka's scope of work compared to how much they pay. Is that what you're asking?
I'd like to see what other cities are getting for this.
Could I just make one observation, please?
Sure.
As staff has indicated, it's done in many different ways. I mean, some cities have just a straight retainer, X number of dollars per month. Some of them have a blended. Mm-hmm. I represent a city where it's just an hourly rate, depending upon how much of my services are used. You have kind of a blended rate. Your retainer is approximately $25,000, and for that you receive the services of Mr. Brown, obviously, but also many of the other attorneys in our office, and of course the litigation, which is always that's the dangerous part. I mean, I don't know how to say it any other way. That's sometimes. Not just the y'all as elected officials, but we as attorneys don't have total control over. You know, you get a tiger by the tail, and sometimes it's tough to control it. We certainly do try, and I don't want to try to go beyond my role because I know that Mr. Brown's been primarily represented. But it is hard when you have litigation, and we do try to make sure that whenever possible, the insurance counsel, you know, which is you know, you've already paid for it, takes care of these things. And we do try to bring it back to a workshop. And let me just, and I'll shut up. One more thing. Sometimes it's hard because remember now, in talking to you all as a group, we can only do that in the sunshine unless the lawsuit's been filed. You know, it's got to be a pending lawsuit. And sometimes, you know, we try to get to you as soon as possible, but sometimes there's not a whole lot to say until you've got the pleadings in order and that sort of thing and know what the issues are and whether there's a settlement, you know, what's the amount of controversy. You know, and that sort of thing. So it's tough.
Commissioner Mackin.
Steve, I want to have that same level. I'm not necessarily ready to push this into an RFP scenario yet. I have internally, mentally, a level of confidence with these,
sure,
these three firms that are there.
So do I.
But I think we're correct in the sense that, yes, there is a due diligence.
Yes,
that we're responsible for. What I'd like to do is to take your idea, and rather than have staff go out and look at 15 different cities or something, if there's 3 to 5 or something, some manageable number that is are relative in size to the city of Winter Park, and see what they do. And I'd be very comfortable if we came back and had that comparison of scopes, and perhaps it'll either verify this or may raise further questions. But I don't have a problem following what you did. I just don't want them. I think the last time we had, there were 12. I mean, it just.
They were all different.
They were all over the place.
There was
no scope. And I really don't. Yeah, I'd like to pick 3 to 5 that are truly represented, or we'll say our peers, or something that's there.
And that could be the next step to an RFP, which I'm comfortable
with.
That
could
look at those scopes of services, and we think that we can get it. We want to arrange it differently. I'm fine with taking that next step.
But I
think there may be an intermediate step that we should
have. I'm on that page more than.
Well, I am very concerned about a flat hourly rate for litigation. I think it encourages litigation. I'm not suggesting that the Brown Garganci firm seeks litigation, but if you're a trial attorney, maybe you do. And I think something that begins to start to look at a fair cost for our citizens, that frankly even discourages litigation. I'm not sure we should be litigant happy as a city. I'm not saying that we have been or haven't been, but I think that. Certainly leave it to the will of the commission, and I don't see 3 to want to go forward. I see 4 that are interested in at least studying this, continuing to study it. But and going to 2006, Commissioner, I don't know what was litigated then and to suggest there's a CPI then. That's like saying I was 150 pounds in 2006. A lot's changed since then, so it's not apples to apples. It's not.
I gotta go back farther.
I just
than
thought
that.
It was interesting.
Well, it's very interesting.
As
but
you
it's,
bring the scope of work forward, but, it actually exceeded what we're paying now, which means there has been some conservation in man hours.
I'd like to make one more statement.
Sure thing, Commissioner.
For me, the issue is not about competence now. It's not about any of that. For me, the issue is fairness in looking at what you get for your pricing. Mm-hmm. And I do know that when we did RFP, our federal lobbyist, we got something different, and we were very clear on our scope. We had some very good proposals, and we did make a change. I'm not even suggesting that happen. I do know that when you put it on the table that way, that you sometimes get better pricing than what you have today, because you have somewhat of a monopoly right now. And so what I'm looking at is something that would be more fair. But I'm very happy to measure the scopes more equally, and then if we want to move forward. But mine's not about competence. Mine's about is there a better way to get a better pricing for what we're getting? Maybe perhaps you do something with litigation. And that's what it's about. It's not about whether or not I think these guys are doing a great job. That's not it. It's about the process we have in place that really has not changed since I've been sitting on the commission.
And just the mere action, and I wish Larry was here, but you know, just the mere conversation now has a letter from Larry, yes, on what we're going to do to manage litigation costs. I mean, I'll tell you very directly, I wish I'd had that 5 years ago. I mean, I don't want to say it's 5 years too late. I mean, it's never too late. But this is what prudent companies, how they manage their legal costs. And we should have nothing different for our citizen taxpayers than what other prudent companies would do to manage litigation and manage that. So, you know, minimally, I would think that this should be incorporated into whatever scope of services that we look at. The mere mention that, yes, you should talk about what this is going to cost in advance, not just willy-nilly jump into it because we make $185 an hour is just not. It's not prudent. It's not good fiscal management.
Mr. Mayor, one last comment. I'm completely agreeing with you on the litigation. I just hope that if we can understand there is a distinction between the services that our firm provides within the retainer and the value that this city is receiving for that work that's done within the retainer, and make sure that we keep that separate from the litigation, because those are two very different things. And I can tell you I'm very proud of the services that our firm has done within the retainer.
And this isn't to me about whether your firm's done a good job or not. This is to me, are we getting the best value for our,
understood,
for our citizens?
Understood.
You know, until I go shop a new car, I don't know whether my old car is still the right thing for,
yes,
me,
sir,
or not. And it may be a very good car. It doesn't mean that it's left me on the side of the road or anything. I just don't know what I don't know until I know it. I shopped my cell phone bill last night, and I saved $60 a month by shopping. You know, that's what it is for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same carrier, same everything.
Absolutely.
Like it just as much as I had. New, brand new phone even. You know, so I think this is, and I'm not going to bait you, Bill, on this one. I think for me this also is not just about the scope of services, but how other cities have created their contracts and structured their contracts. So I think that would be very important for the commission to know. You know, how do other cities deal with litigation? Is it just straight dollar first part? Is it a $50,000 fee? And whenever we go through that, it is. And, you know, that's something we don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think that staff has to guide us.
And all I wanted to add, and absolutely, Mr. Mayor, none of us at our firm would begrudge any company from periodically making sure that they're getting the best value. I just want you to know we're very sensitive to our reputation
as far as the
quality of our services.
Yeah, that's why we hire you. I would expect you to be.
Sure.
But I also think every 5 years is probably
certainly
worthy to look at, even if it's with people you like or you highly respect.
I think we agreed on that a couple of years ago when we talked about it. I totally agree.
But we don't have that agreement to go forward. So I hear that, I don't know, clarify what especially you, Commissioner McMackin and Commissioner Larry want. I'm ready to go to an RFP tonight, but you all have some additional information you'd like to know.
I'd like to understand what scope of services a comparable group of cities have for their legal services. And I would limit that to five. I think that's enough to actually take a look at a fair comparison of how they contract for their legal services.
Okay.
Steve, was that?
I'm fine with
and
that.
Is, that's for all three contracts?
Yes.
That's for the legal, the labor, and the
and
lobbyist?
If they've broken them out separately, yes.
And I would add, I would like to have some sense of whatever those five cities are. And they should be representative. I think Maitland,
sure,
and Orlando ought to be two of them. You know, what do they, and I realize the contracts are structured all over the board. And there's some logic behind every one. I don't think that any one city just dreamt it up or just took whatever a lawyer gave them. So there's some logic. I'd like to understand those logics as to what they have tried to do in their contracts to assure that they're getting good legal support, but getting it at a fair price.
Okay.
So to me, when you pay for the first hour of litigation, guess what you're going to get? You're going to get litigation. And I personally don't like that,
mm-hmm,
personally.
Mayor, as we look at this, would you try to select peer cities that also have their own water, their own electric? I think a lot of our structure needs to relate.
I think you're going to find with electric.
Yeah, we'll probably be able to find other cities.
So you know, in the future, if we think those things are costing us more legally, we ought to charge those to our utilities.
We do.
And we do.
Yes.
So we do that. So I think,
yeah,
that is being taken into account today.
No.
We split the retainer.
We split the retainer amongst those funds.
But the retainer and isn't more than what we're seeing here. You're just saying that it's paid for out of those other funds.
Right.
The retainer is still $25,000.
The same retainer split between.
That's correct.
Right. But that isn't the cost to the general fund. You're saying $25,000 isn't the cost to the general fund.
It's not the cost to the general fund.
Well, that's significant also. Thank you.
That is.
Okay, I did not hear you ask me to negotiate or shop price at this point, right?
No, structure.
That is,
okay.
No, and I don't think you could do that without an RFP. So.
That's why I wanted to make sure I didn't hear that.
You did not hear that.
You're hearing for more information from the commission, which will be brought back. I guess the commission at that time will decide whether or not they want to RFP this or not.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
We're going to take up citizen comments near the 5 o'clock hour. We'll go to the consent agenda.
I'd move for approval.
Thank you.
Second.
And I'm just going to say, I think that... Cindy, am I correct? There were some adjustments to the minutes that were sent out.
And my move, your motion is those with adjustments. That. Yes, sir.
There was a second. Open the floor for public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter are welcome to. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. We're going to go to item 10A, the Sustainability Action Plan. Mr. Knight, I don't know if you want to kick this off or
yes,
staff will kick this off, but come on down, folks.
Yes, I'm going to ask Chris Stenner to come forward with Abby.
Tonight,
and,
so.
I don't know about that.
You had a presentation of the plan a couple of months back, and so tonight is before you for action. Chris is prepared to talk about some of the changes that were made based upon the feedback received from the commission. So, Chris?
Thank you. Back in November, we came to present the work of the Keep Winter Park Beautiful and Sustainability Board. What they've done over the last several years in crafting this sustainability action plan. Since that, we've taken your comments and also had the opportunity to each to meet with you, and it was very educational for us to get your insight, and we've taken those comments and adjusted the plan accordingly. So short presentation, but again, where we are, here looking at sort of down at the 7 o'clock hour, if you will, looking for review and approval. One of the suggestions was to yearly to come back and monitor and report to the commission, so that you'll see is also there as we move up along this timeline process. Again, just to reiterate what the mission is of this plan, of course, to make this a great place and in regards to making it more of a healthier and beautiful place to live, work, and play. Looking at the mission, we went through that as well during our presentation. Some of the things of note that we have changed, we've reduced the emphasis on the green local government certification. Basically, rather than letting that drive the plan, it's a sort of a byproduct of how well we do. A greater emphasis on evaluation and feasibility, looking at larger goals. So rather than focusing on certain steps that may become more of an issue, such as, let's say, once a week trash collection, looking at it and evaluating and looking at from an overall waste reduction standpoint, what are the steps that we could take? So we've changed that language. And as I mentioned, the addition of annual reports, an action plan, and if there were any associated budgets to include those as well. And then, of course, updating our implementation dates to be more in line with some of the comments that we heard from today, as well as the fact that, you know, this process has been ongoing, and as things have come up, things have moved forward and back. I'm also happy to note that since that time, we were selected as one of 50 cities in the country to move forward in the Georgetown Energy Prize. So we're really excited about that. That'll be a two-year process of looking at our energy use. So while, you know, the budget numbers are showing a reduction in Jerry's number, there's a flip side to that for us sometimes. So, but we're definitely working with Jerry and happy to for his help on this plan. We also... kicked off our green business program this last month, so we're excited about getting that started as well. So those are just a couple of highlights that I wanted to bring up. So basically, we're here today asking for adoption of the plan and then moving forward. So,
So for purpose of discussion, I'm going to move the plan as presented. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Questions? Are you willing to take questions?
Sure, certainly.
I've got three and then a general comment. I personally need more education on the pay-as-you-throw idea. I think it's intriguing. Since it's kind of a dramatically different way to ask our citizens to pay for their garbage, I think before and evaluate is what I see you have in the proposal at this point. It's just intriguing. I don't know what it does. I don't know the effects. I've never seen one work. I don't know how you measure that it's my garbage versus my neighbor sneaking in garbage at night when my can is out.
Certainly.
So those are the things that, I mean, and those of us who have seen dumpsters in our area know that people do that all the time. So I don't know what it does, but it's a very intriguing idea. So the evaluation of it to me is positive. What does a certified green neighborhood mean? I'm familiar right. with the local government, and you've given us good criteria for that, but I don't know what a neighborhood
yeah,
is.
Yeah, so basically the U.S. Green Building Council has created LEED for neighborhood developments.
Is that for, like, residential
developments? That's for residential developments. Now, obviously,
it's not necessarily like all of our homes in a neighborhood would necessarily be green, but if we built a new one, they may meet those criteria.
That's what, when you're looking at a definition of a green neighborhood, in this program or within this plan, it talks about both green LEED neighborhood developments, but it also talks about developing a plan, if you will, for existing neighborhoods to somehow sort of maybe not, I don't know exactly where. Going to look at what that might be. You know, for instance, you're familiar with walk score. You know, developing something along those lines to be able to identify neighborhoods that are looking at, that are good from an alternate mobility standpoint, you know, energy and water reduction. It's a program that we would look at as we move forward.
Would you look at that in the context of the whole program so I know some of the things of sustainability is like nearness to
exactly.
food sources, other things like that?
Absolutely.
So basically, if I could explain it in my own way, would it be taking these overall goals that we have as a city and then looking at them also by neighborhood potentially?
Right. And then we would be able to identify what are things that we could do in certain areas to help improve, you know, those attributes of that neighborhood.
Chris, the other thing, and this is comment, and I've thought long and hard since you and your fellow colleagues have brought this to us before, and specifically to me the fighting words of once a week garbage. I'd like to retranslate that in my own mind, and think that we have not done yet enough as a city to really get, I guess I would say garbage down and recycling up. And to me, I would love to see initiatives, efforts that get that going before we go and now say we're only going to do it once a week. I would rather let this create its own demand for it, because I still believe that just saying it's going to happen once a week isn't going to do it.
Right. No.
But I think doing things. So I'm very intrigued. I understand there might be some staff discussion around potentially a single income. I mean, not income, but a single waste stream idea, if that would be helpful to us. If there's other things that we could do with our garbage. Necessarily that wouldn't just all go to the landfill. You know, I'm very intrigued by those ideas and think that those have merit, because I think that they would both decrease our garbage, decrease trucks on our streets, as well as ultimately hopefully get our citizens to be where they are at least today, if not more.
Right. Within the next year, you know, our solid waste contract is up for renewal. We're meeting with Kessler, a consultant that we've hired, within the next couple of weeks. So this is really one of the four, you know, on our plates moving forward. So get ready, because that learning what those things are about is coming up.
So I commend you. So since I'm almost off the commission,
I want to jump in on one point.
But this whole concept of recycling then reduction is my mantra going forward to this. You know, let's get that recycling. And I don't even know how we compare as a city. We ought to start looking to see percentage of, I don't know if it's recycled or whatever. Commissioner, you're a thoughtful man on the subject. Please.
No, I mean, and our comparisons are not good. I think in the report we're recycling somewhere in the neighborhood of 15%.
Correct.
And statewide the goal is much
right.
higher.
And but, I don't know, I mean, statewide the goal might be 100, but I don't know that who's achieving that. So
probably.
I'd like to see some actual numbers versus even goals.
And the other thing I would request, Chris, because I share that concern, Mayor, and the willing or the want to go forward and reduce that. Over the next year, as these discussions are taking place, could you keep the commission up to date. Don't wait until the end and bring something to us. I'd really like to know interim steps as they're going forward, because this is an issue that I think is going to take a lot of thought. We're going to enter into a new contract, and if we can get that information,
I think
I don't say piecemeal, but in meaningful bits going forward, as opposed to waiting to the end and saying, "Hey, here it is."
Commissioner, I think it's going to take a lot of thought, but I think it's also going to take a lot of education on that on all of our sakes, multi-source for our citizens. You know,
yes.
I mean, we've collected garbage and paid for it, at least as far as I know, for the last 53 years the same way, and maybe before that in our city. So there was a recycling before, so that's a new thing. But this whole concept, I'm going to pay more or less if I have more, you know, that just all becomes to be very, it may be wonderful. I mean, people may accept it, but it's such a change.
It really is.
And it's not a, oh, now we have cell phone changes. This is a pretty dramatic change. So I want to make sure we have a change management process if we're going to actively consider those things. Commissioner Cooper.
Thank you, sir. Now, this applies to both commercial and residential, this pay-as-you-throw. Is that correct?
I mean, we can craft this.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
those are things but
it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
There are definitely...
I think commercial people pay differently today, Commissioner.
Right. I mean, there's models all over the country that have tried. You go buy a bag versus there's a mechanism that picks up and weighs. So, you know... There's a lot of different.
So there's a lot of exploration yet to go, and as we make decisions that are going to impact levels of service that are guaranteed our residents through the guaranteed levels of service and the comprehensive plan, we do want to make sure we have public outreach and lots of education.
Absolutely.
Before it comes here, please. I would appreciate that very much. I noticed a few of these things are tied directly to the success of SunRail. And I hate to see them pushed out into future years. So my only thought is some of these things that talk about connectivity to SunRail that are out in 2017, we have some things here relative to do with pedestrian safety. On page 19, there are three of them in particular that I would love.
We've already adopted a pedestrian plan, and I thought that was going forward. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think this is not going to be our plan for pedestrian safety or transportation. This just incorporates the plan we already have. Am I correct?
It actually does have some pedestrian safety.
Because, I mean, we already have that. So I don't know that we need that in our sustainability plan. I think we ought to say we reference it in our pedestrian plan. Am I correct? I don't think
we're
making that
check
up. As well as our bicycling plan.
I don't think there is a duplication of efforts here. They seem to be. I just wanted to point out three things I'd like you to think about. One is evaluating and expanding the bus service, or considering some kind of flex bus to increase service to SunRail. I think that's something we don't want to put too far in the future. I think we need to be doing that now, and I'm sure Don's working on that, right? And the second one is encouraging private developments to increase safety and ease of walking and cycling through site plan review process. So, Randy, I don't know if we already have something like that going on in the DRCs and in the reviews of these major projects, but I would hate to push this out too far into the future.
Well, I would hate that this is in our sustainability plan. I mean, these make sense to be in our other plans.
There are hundreds, but personally, I looked at them all, felt very comfortable, but there are just a few that seemed like we might not want to wait quite as long as others. And the last one is encouraging businesses to offer commuter incentive benefits. So, and those are things that don't necessarily cost us anything, so we could actually do them sooner without having to adjust budgets. So, and those were my only comments. I think that you have done an incredible job here. I really like the idea of making sure that annually you make sure that whatever your initiatives and objectives are calculated in that year's budgets so you can actually accomplish them and we don't just have someone's dream. I think you've done a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions? Commissioner Sprinkle.
Along those lines, I remember the garbage man actually coming into my backyard, picking up the garbage can and taking it out front.
Change.
So that has changed, and thank goodness things have changed over time. Also, though, with technology as it is today, there are so many things that have been created since the idea of recycling here and throwing this kind of trash here that we need to take advantage of. So I really encourage us to look at that kind of thing. As far as I'm concerned, that's where we need to be putting our emphasis on what technology has created for us so that we don't have to continue with some of the 2 and 3 and 4 trips a day pickups. And then so much of what you have in here, and you know that I think you all did a fabulous job, but I would love to see all of the boards, this is one of Sarah's things, react to this. Because it seems like every board has just a little piece of it. And so in some way, when you all are doing the way you manage each other, maybe you've already done this, hopefully you'll take this to all the boards so they have a chance to weigh in. And that just helps us long-term when it comes here to know that other boards have also seen it, whether it's pedestrian and bike safety or whatever it is.
Yeah, we have letters of support from most of the boards because we have been actively going to those meetings right. in leading up and will continue as part of as we move forward.
Sir, can I piggyback on that just a little bit? To me, it's more than just support. I want to hear from the department managers that their budget includes making this happen. Because if it doesn't, then it shouldn't be in there.
Well, it shouldn't cost more. I mean, sustainability, the whole concept of sustainability is that it should be done within the price we're currently paying for it.
There are a lot of actions in here.
If sustainability costs more money, I think I'm going to withdraw my motion. I mean,
one of the missions is to save money.
Right.
That's right. The objective is to be cost neutral, isn't it? That's what for me, it's not just the boards. I want to understand at budget time that we're all signed up to this. That's
okay.
All. Sorry, Sarah, just... Came
Great.
To me.
Other questions of the commission? I'm going to open the floor for public comment then and see what our citizens have to think about this. Chris, if you'd relinquish the mic, so if citizens want to come, they're welcome to. Seeing none, I'll close.
I think John.
Yep.
Yeah.
John, we need to identify yourself. And I love the idea that you're going to pass garbage out to us. But.
So I'm not passing out garbage. My name is John Reif. I'm a citizen of Winter Park. I live at 1650 Pine Avenue. And I was on the sustainability board when a lot of this was drafted. So I'm very glad that it's finally made its way here. They have been very diligent in talking with other boards, so it's excellent. I just want to say it puts us in the category of a really forward-thinking city. So the things that are on here are things that everyone should be able to agree to. I think the budget question is a great one, but a lot of us are spending our volunteer time doing this kind of work because we believe in it, not because we want an award for the city. So I think you're going to get a lot of help from the community to make this stuff possible. I brought Fleet Greens. So we have a program in Orlando right now that's pedal powered. We farm 10 different backyards. We take it to market in Orlando every Monday night. So this could happen here.
Yes.
Nothing has to happen. No money has to be spent. Just, some people on the commission and this citizenry that goes, yes, a backyard could be used to produce food for the community. So I'm not bribing you with bags of green money, but green lettuce. So thank you very much.
That's so kind of you.
I'm all for it. Cheers.
And probably that speaks to whether our codes will permit that or not. The codes will pass them down. Thank you, John.
From last week.
Thank you so much.
From your other friends that are doing this fleet farming. Thank you.
May I comment that I just read about you in the paper today, and your new market was highlighted, and I was very pleased to see that.
It is interesting to note. I don't know that our city codes would permit that, Jeff, or anybody. Could I grow in my yard garden in the back and sell it? I don't know. It just speaks to great ideas that maybe our codes don't. I know that we can't have chickens or cows or pigs.
I think we
so
can grow.
It's something we need to look at. Great point. Other comments from citizens? If you'd all line up, whoever wants to speak, that would help all of our time, please.
Yes, I don't have my form, but I'll get one. Gordon Blitz, 695 French Avenue, Winter Park, 32789. This may or may not be useful information, but you talk about the commercial and requiring them to do this and so forth. The nice folks at Café de France for years have been carrying all of their wine and whiskey bottles home and putting them out in front of their house for recycling because there was no recycling for them, which, of course, creates quite an impression on the neighborhood until they know what's going on. The other thing is I personally often don't recycle everything because the little bins are, my garbage could be picked up once a month. really, even though I have a lot of family that comes over many times. Most of what I'm throwing away is paper, plastic, aluminum, and other things like that. Personal experiences in Covington, Kentucky, where I have a condominium and go up quite frequently. The pickup is a large auto type thing for garbage and a large auto thing type thing for recycling, and they pick them both up at the same time with a claw that comes out and dumps it like so. Very efficient. I'm sure these folks have These folks have explored a lot of those things, but this is just personal experience I'm offering as a thought.
Thank you. And hopefully in Covington, they just don't all send it to the same place. Some places they do that, and guess what? It all goes in the same garbage place. So that's a good point. Thank you, Gordon. Others? I'll close the floor for public comment. You all ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Item 10B. I don't know if this requires Mr. Reichman to read or not.
No, sir.
That's not.
I think this is mine.
Yes, it is.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Another sunny day here in Winter Park. We're here tonight to ask for formal authorization to move forward with a notice of disposal on the Progress Point site, 1150 North Orange Avenue. We came to you with a opportunity discussing a contingent plan with the post office, but did not get clear direction that we could go ahead and put this out for an advertised notice. We're asking tonight to be able to do that. We are going through the notice of disposal process, as Mr. Reichman told you earlier. This is not required. This is not in the CRA. However, the notice of disposal process does give us that opportunity to ask for proposals, actual written proposals, and designs and drawings on that particular site, as well as financial requests as well. So we're using the notice of disposal to create an entire package that we will bring back in approximately 60 days for you all for your decision. As we've done with other notice of disposal processes, this does not obligate you at all to get rid of this to decide to dispose of this property. You can look at what's offered and say, nope, we're not ready right now, or we think we have a public purpose for it at this point in time. So it's just that opportunity to have people give you suggestions and see what's out there on the market that you might be interested in pursuing.
Will the commission? I'd move the approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner Cooper?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Last meeting, I had requested that the city possibly consider holding on to this property until we had an opportunity to consider the post office. And I know that we decided not to, but part of that discussion was that the site could or could not support more development. And I just...
Which site are you referencing?
I'm talking about the Progress Point site. Would you mind just putting this on the overhead for just a second? I know that Commissioner Sprinkle asked, well, then we're talking about using up almost all of the site, and the answer that she got back was
all but half an acre.
A lot of it. Most of the site. And I just want you to see this, because these are the drawings that were done for CNL. And what this shows is this particular site, Progress Point, can indeed support the distribution center. It can support, if you see on there, I don't know if you can blow it up a little bit, but it shows that it can support all of the trucks required by the distribution center, all of the employees for the post office, plus it can support a 40,000 square foot building on Orange Avenue with adequate parking. And I guess the reason I wanted you to see this is because a 40,000 square foot building is actually bigger than anything we have on Orange Avenue right now. So when I was requesting that maybe we consider allowing a portion of this to be used for the distribution center and only selling the part that's on Orange Avenue, I wasn't trying to inhibit development. I actually am trying to encourage compatible development on that road. And this would allow a 40,000 square foot building. The only other building close to that size is Jewett. So we can split this property and still have good development and get the post office property for the citizens of Winter Park and for the future. And that's the only reason that I wanted to bring this back up again today. I know that you kind of made a decision about this, but I'd like to ask you to please reconsider the possibility that this property does have a vital civic use, and it is a civic use that would result in the residents of Winter Park having a central square in the downtown area. And I just hated to see this property slip away, because there's no doubt that we will get development proposals for more multifamily development. And whether, I just don't know why we would want to throw it out there until we've at least tried to close the loop with the post office.
I trust you talked to the neighbors in College Quarter and everywhere about putting the distribution center there.
I actually have talked to quite a few of the neighbors and the businesses on, yes, and the businesses on Orange Avenue. Most people would like to see the post office property turned into an extension of Central Park. And that's not something that very many people disagree with.
And they're ready to put 200 trucks into their neighborhood for that?
I don't think it's 200. I think it's 89 or 49 or something.
Times two, because you come and go every day.
But anyway, I just really believe that this is in the best interest of Winter Park, and I hate, we have waited, we have sat on that property for years, and we said we were sitting on it until the market for office improved. The market for office hasn't improved very much, and we could hold on to it just a little bit more and maybe let Randy close this loop. And that's my question, is there anyone that would even consider it?
Has something happened to make us think the post office is going to change their mind?
No, the post office said if we relocated the distribution center.
Yeah, I know that, but right. I mean, has there been anything else?
Not to my knowledge.
Because they're not okay.
Do you mean change
but we
their
already
mind, not
we
the
already
mind.
We already addressed this and said no.
Right, and that's why I'm asking you to reconsider. And we said no, though, based on some a little bit bad information. You know, it made it. What I heard, and I went back and listened to the tape, was pretty much a suggestion that possibly this property couldn't support the distribution center and be a viable redevelopment, and it can.
Dory, what's it zoned for today?
Office. Professional.
Yeah. Can you put distribution into an office building?
O-1,
even
no.
Permitted in our city?
We'd have to.
No. So we couldn't even, I mean, we couldn't even entertain this in our current codes. So I don't know why we would take office and want to put industrial distribution into it. But I think, you know, if somebody
well,
wants to...
If it's there or in the core of Winter Park, I'm not sure that that wouldn't be a much better option. But anyway, that was my plea, is that if there is any political will for reconsideration, just to delay this notice of disposition a little bit, I would love to allow Randy to pursue this further.
And what would he, I don't understand what he would pursue. Building this, trying to see how much it would cost?
Yes, doing, actually, when I looked at the agenda packet and I went back to the last time we considered this, EDAB and Planning and Zoning had a meeting and they very clearly said that they are interested in participating in any further discussions. And once we make up our mind whether we want to get rid of the property or keep the property, they would like the opportunity to be a part of formulating how we move forward. In fact, they specifically recommended keep the property until the market improves, decide if there's a public use, decide when to sell it, if we are going to sell it, decide what option to use, and should we decide to sell it, their recommendation was it should be the city that sets the development standards, and we should consider rezoning it to PD1. That was a thought of theirs. And if there's some public component, we might want to define that. So I guess my point is we have two very educated, experienced develop boards that have people on it that understand development better than we do. We discussed that last week. We're not developers. And we have a piece of property that does have a viable consideration for a public use and a development. So I'm just asking, can we slow it down a little bit, allow EDAB planning and zoning to come back and give us a business case that shows us what is the cost benefit of using it for the post office, selling it now, rezoning it before we sell it, closing down Palmetto, realigning Palmetto. There are lots of moving parts, and I think we have very skilled expertise on our Economic Development Board and our Planning and Zoning Board, and I would move that this project be returned to the board for their input.
We've already put a motion on the table, so you make an amendment.
I make an amendment.
And what are you amending?
I am amending that we hold the decision on the basic amendment until basic motion until after this has been reviewed by both planning and zoning and economic development, and they have had an opportunity to advise us.
Is there a second? Commissioner, that dies for lack of a second.
Thank you for allowing me to.
You're welcome.
Present.
And I want a clarification because on my part to you, really holding on to this piece of property or any portion of this property, in my mind, does not guarantee anything with the post office.
Right.
And the reason it doesn't is because, number one, there are millions and millions of dollars involved in doing that. It's not just the property.
Correct.
And we don't have the $7 million right now to do that. And so, we don't have, whether it's $3 million, $7 million, or $1 million,
it's more like
we have...
Understand.
We have this side of $0
to do
that.
But if we sold the part that faced orange, we'd have it.
We would have something less than the $5 million that we would do that. So
if we sell the whole thing for $8 million, we might go be able to do the deal someplace else and kick in more money. So that's why we
at the moment, and why I voted the way I did is because we do not have a deal on the table with the post office. My question whether we will in another 6 weeks or 6 months. I'm waiting to see what a proposal would come back for. I don't know what that would bring. I don't have to accept anything that comes back unless I like it, unless three of us like it. So it could. We may find a better use for that. We may not.
Did you disagree with the recommendation made by the Economic Development Board that the city should decide what the development standards are, whether to rezone it to PD1 before
that's
publicizing.
That's my own. That is probably
those are some
only,
real
that
issues.
I don't want to get into. I'm not necessarily sure I want to get into development.
Well, it doesn't
standards.
Qualify for PD1 because it's 4.8 acres or 5 acres. It's only 3.5.
Actually,
three is our PD1.
Actually, it's one of the few properties that not only qualifies but is designated in our comprehensive plan as being appropriate for PD1.
But our comprehensive plan doesn't permit us on properties other than 3 acres or less. So this is a larger site.
Right.
So
you
say that two PD1s.
You'd only be able to use the 3 acres of the site as a PD1.
Right.
You could not use any of the remaining acreage to help with the PD at all.
So we could change that.
It would have to be a separate zoning category.
But the PD, if I understand the PD correctly, is that it's not a zoning classification. It is something they can apply for. So we wouldn't have to rezone it to PD1 if some developer came in as part of this notice to dispose and said, in order to do this, I'm applying for PD1 over the 3 acres of this that I can. He could do that without, there is no, we wouldn't have to rezone
Correct.
It prior to that.
The other side of this.
It just makes it more valuable.
The other side of this to remember as well is when you look at these proposals, you are not saying grace on these proposals. You are not approving these proposals when you look at them. Whoever comes in with a proposal will still have to go through the public hearing process. You'd still have to take it through P&Z. And yourselves, there'd still be an entire process through this notice of disposal. There's no done deal if you found someone who brought in a concept that you like that you're saying yes on that.
The only done deal is that we have removed the possibility of using it for the distribution center. And that's the reason I wanted to bring that back up today and see if I had any support. And obviously,
I would not want citizens listening to say that that's what's occurring with this vote because that's totally inaccurate, Commissioner.
I'm sorry.
The other question I have is how long is the notice of disposal good for? In other words, if we get these and we don't like any of them, do you have to do another notice of disposal within a certain period of time?
Not within a certain period of time, but we would in the future. When if we get them in and you don't like any of them or the price isn't right,
right.
We can continue to sit
okay.
on the property until such a time that you as a commission decide you want to do something with it.
Please, Commissioner Mackin.
Dory, the one limitation I see on the site is Palmetto, and I don't know if there's a way in the notice to dispose to say that we would entertain or be acceptable of creative methods of dealing with that so that it's not a clear it has to stay where it is. It may be relocated along the side. It's up to them.
Yeah,
it's part of their deal.
When we last discussed this, commissioners were against it, but now we just saw a plan where
they moved and
addressed.
The streets,
so I guess
the right-of-way was just adjusted. I would like to say that, you know, that is not a that location of the road in that spot is not necessarily cast in stone. If a developer wanted to move that right-of-way or do something else with it, that we would at least
entertain it.
Well, then we'll get our process.
I don't want to say that now because that's just.
Because I mean, right now that splits the
That's not my deal.
That splits the property in
well,
half,
that's what it is.
It's
now.
Yeah. I think we're.
And that was the.
It's a city.
I mean, there's another property for sale next to it. Who knows what somebody may want to look at all the properties.
But that our city property, which we are not advertising at the moment, is that right of way.
I feel comfortable that staff could probably have a discussion with the applicants that there is flexibility. You know, as long as we make sure that the property, when we discussed this originally, some of the property owners to the south,
yes.
You know, unfortunately, were being used. It was kind of a political pawn play.
I think it was about Lombardi's.
But I think there was concern that they were going to be locked out, and we allayed those concerns, saying anything that we're planning on doing with this, we would consult them, and if there was a closing down of that right-of-way, we would talk about a reconfiguration to make sure that their properties could still get addressed. I still think, I mean, I am in no way supporting the closing of Palmetto unless we address a different egress for those properties. So I think you can have those conversations without putting it in the nod. I'm fine with that, Dory. As long as they know there's flexibility, but they're just not cutting off those properties.
Yeah, and the intent was not to cut off the tent. It was really
right.
to provide that flexibility to say,
right.
hey,
well,
if you know, because
we'd consider.
I'm just saying, I don't think it needs to be in it. I think you can have.
Okay,
that
if we can do that.
Sure.
Outside of that, I'm fine. But again, that was because that does severely limit.
I've never found out that really changed anybody's presentation. Anyway, they went right ahead and dreamed it up. So
I just want to, you know, that. Have that out.
Okay, further commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter.
Joe Terranova, 151 North Virginia Avenue. I was not going to speak on this topic this evening, but since the post office was mentioned in this discussion, and since I have some very strong views about the post office, I wanted to make my comments to you as it relates to this property or any other property in the city of Winter Park. I, along with many, many people in Winter Park, would like to acquire the property on which the post office is currently located. But I don't think that the citizens of Winter Park should spend one dime either to purchase the property or purchase the post office and have to build another post office. This, to me, would be total madness. The post office is a dying institution. I can't tell you the day it's going to go out of business, but it's not going to be here much longer. And I'd like to give you just a very, very simple example. You all know that I had a birthday Saturday. Both my daughters sent me a birthday card, which I think was very nice, but there were emails. The post office was not involved in those two transactions. Now, that is a very minor thing, but you multiply that by millions of transactions, and you see what's going to happen to the post office. Our system today does not require the type of post office system. I have even received a notice from a catalog company that I use quite frequently. They're going online, I guess because the rates are too high. and the post office is just going to die. If we can get a right of first refusal to buy that property, to turn it into some public use, whether it be a park or for some institutional use, that would be fine. We can worry about getting the money if we can get to that point. But I would be totally opposed to spending any city money. This is a federal responsibility, not a Winter Park responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to speak to us? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. Further commission discussion?
Not so.
Clerk will read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Proposal for visioning steering committee members. Ms. Stone?
Yes, I'm back again. At the last city commission meeting, you asked staff to bring forward some recommendations to a membership structure for the visioning steering committee. I have looked online. I have researched numerous steering committees throughout the country, throughout the state, communities that are our size, communities that are larger and smaller than us. There's no one set model. There really isn't one size fits all in a steering committee model. Certainly, we are looking for a steering committee that reflects the sense of community in Winter Park. We're looking for very heavy on the resident side, which has been the structure of the vision RFP so far, but also on the side of community services and employers and some of the large commercial property owners. The concept that I worked with, and I've had input from several of the members of the community on, is to look at creating an executive committee that would be made up of residents only. Each of you would get two resident appointments. That executive committee would then nominate a chair, and they would themselves offer up suggestions for the other remaining board members, which I believe I have as a representative of a faith-based community organization, a representative of a large employer, two representatives of culture, art, and heritage, a representative from the health-oriented organization, a representative of higher education, a representative of downtown business interests, and a representative of a commercial business. One of the concepts that we've worked through on some of this was to make as many of these representatives as residents as we could. So we have not only that strong community interest, but we also have these backed up by people who live here as well as work here and do their business in Winter Park. This is simply a staff recommendation. It's based on culling through any number of organizations that have been created, and I am more than willing to take any modifications or structure that you all would like to offer.
I'm going to move the membership as you proposed, but strike the not currently serving on any other city boards. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Just there could be people that are on a task force or something that somebody may want to appoint that might be good. I wouldn't want to limit it personally.
Right. My thought behind that was what an opportunity to get people who have maybe not stepped their
agreed,
feet into the city process.
But my other thought is that's probably not the first time you should be coming forth. I think it'll be a mix of knowing the people I serve with. We'll have people, but I wouldn't want to be limited to just people that don't serve.
Okay.
There's a interest level from people who have said I would serve on a board.
Okay.
And I think that some tolerance of understanding the way the city works, et cetera, it may be all or that. I mean, nobody may serve on a board, which is great. If we can pull that off, that would be spectacular. But I would hate to be limited by somebody who may serve on a task force or a board today.
I just wanted you to understand the thought process.
Right. And I think that's special. The other thing that I would comment, and I don't know where we would add this, but I hope our visioning process will include, as you've said, Commissioner Sprinkle, our boards somehow. So just like we had the sustainability plan, it feels like our boards need to weigh in on, you know, certainly a vision and maybe even whatever the section. If we're going to have a lakes vision, maybe the lakes board helps lead that piece of the vision.
I think that, pardon me?
Yeah, use that expertise.
That would be the idea, is to use their expertise. And in theory, already they're experts in our community on a subject. So if part of our vision is the sustainability plan, I would want, you know, input and representation from Keep Winter Park Beautiful on that board. They have a leg up on me, who doesn't do that for every day. So I don't know how we get that. Maybe that's tactical. That's tactical. Maybe that's not necessary in the membership. But I hope that becomes part of the visioning process.
One of the ideas I've had, and certainly when we get a consultant on board to discuss it with them and the steering committee, would be to use our boards as that first step of getting the steering committee used to going through the process of the of working through a survey or working through some public input through the boards. What a great opportunity with our boards already established to get folks who may not have that process well in hand to let them and use our boards to be able to structure that, knowing then that our boards then can go out in the community and hopefully kind of carry the sign that this visioning effort that the city is underway is really worthwhile.
So I've kind of been formally, with the exception of adding that, but I think it's really probably a process versus a membership. I recognize Commissioner Sprinkle, and I recognize you, Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you.
I simply wanted to say that when we just approved this sustainability report that we have been talking about working with, to me, that is a first step in the visioning process. That is a visioning document. It says what Winter Park may be able to do in the future, so let's look at that. So I want to see that included in some form or fashion in the visioning process. There's no reason for this committee to start all over again when they've spent all this time already doing that. So I would love to see, maybe even it's in a formalized manner, that the boards be included in this and that we actually add to this, not a membership deal, but that we say that the boards in the city of Winter Park should be reviewed, should be look at this before it even goes out, just like what you said, but maybe we actually write it down. Maybe we formalize it so that the boards actually have that in writing.
Would you allow the steering committee, once appointed, to maybe set that as part of their mission with regard to how they want to see working with boards? And perhaps if we could give the steering committee that, this executive committee, that flexibility to help structure the connection with the boards back to the steering committee and the consultant, that would be a great way to bring a task forward to this group.
All right.
I prefer to see that happen more organically.
Okay.
I mean, I think what's before us this evening, and what I perceive is that we're setting up, we're being asked to vote on a process to set up a steering committee.
Right.
And I really want them. Okay. And I've struggled, Mr. Mayor. I've struggled as well with, if you're already on a board, because we have so many boards in our community, and it's a great thing, and we have so many incredibly intelligent and thoughtful people on those boards, to automatically say that no, you may not be nominated for this initial steering committee. I've struggled with that, and there may be somebody that I know that's on a board that I would love to see on that steering committee. But I would love to see us this evening adopt something that says, here's how we're going to appoint that initial board. Dory said, here are some additional groups, organizations, or whatnot that steering committee then may want to consider adding on. I want them to own it, and I really want our consultant to come on board and say, this is the best way to deal with the existing structures that you already have, rather than tell them that. And I think they will, right? Because they've done this in other communities, I'm sure, and will come in and say, hey, here's how you are inclusive of all your citizens and all your boards and your information to date, because it behooves them as well not to rethink things twice. So okay. rather than prescriptive to this, okay. I would like personally to have that steering committee set up this evening by however manner we wish to do that. And I'm figuring out how we divide 12 by 5. I'm still working on that part. But I'd like to do that, allow them then to fill out their membership of that steering committee in a manner that committee, and if they choose to have people from other boards on that committee, personally I'm fine with that because I want them to own it. They are going to be our vehicle for having this thing go forward, and I want them to own it and direct it. So I'm very comfortable with what Dory's put before us, and I just think the rest of this, inclusion of boards, inclusion of community groups, inclusion of all that, will occur as this process unfolds, because I totally agree. I don't want to pay somebody to go back and rethink things, but I don't want to handcuff them starting out saying, here's what you, you know, here it is, and this is how you deal with it. So
So, Commissioner, I want to be clear. I don't know where you got. Excuse me, Commissioner. I have the floor. I'm asking Commissioner Mackin a question.
Sir,
12 by 5. There'd be 10 by 5.
Well, there were 12 neighborhoods.
There's 12 districts.
There's 12 districts, and Dory's recommendation was that individual from each one of those 12 districts be appointed by this commission.
Well,
and I went back and
I guess I just want to be a little bit.
I was more interested to make sure that we had appointments from each of the 12 districts. Don't care how it's split up.
That was somewhat joking.
In the motion, I did not include that. What I said was there would be 10 neighborhood representatives. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to be, you know, all from the same neighborhood, just like we don't serve from our neighborhoods.
Right.
The, you're going to have to balance that somehow when we get to there, but there'd be 10 plus these additional seats that may be included appointed by that board.
So that's what I seconded.
And your only change, Mayor, was that you wanted to delete not serving on other city boards.
Right. I think there could be people that are serving on current city boards or about to serve on or closing task force, other things. I'm thinking of our library task force. There's people there that I think would be wonderful in a visioning session. I wouldn't want to exclude them because they're helping us in another area.
Dory, would that – I'm sorry, can I?
Yes, Commissioner Ray.
Dory, would the 10 disrupt your desire to have 12?
Not at all. If I see a hole that's not covered, we'll call it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's when you go to do that, there's going to have to be some looking at have we got cross-representation, demographic, economically. Commissioner Cooper?
Yes, my thoughts on this was that if we are going to take it through the boards, which Sarah was thinking might be a good idea, and I think that's a pretty good idea too, but I also, going into this, do support choosing people that aren't already on those boards. And I'll tell you, I really struggled with that because I was trying to think, can I really come up with that many more people that are willing to invest in the community? But I think that's a good challenge for us. That says we got to step outside those 20 people that we know are good leaders and are in there on our boards already, and we need to reach out into the community and broaden the base of people that participate. So I am comfortable going outside of our current board, so that part of the motion I'm probably not going to be able to support. But what occurred to me when I looked at this that's even more important to me is that we have a group here of 17 people, and of those 17 people, less than half of them are neighborhood representatives. And if I look at our tax base, the tax base is 80% residential, 20% commercial. If I look at our land mass in Winter Park, we have 3,000 acres of residential, we have 600 acres of commercial. Again, 83% residential. So from my perspective, the steering committee needs to be representative of the community, which says 83% of the steering committee should be neighborhood representatives. Now, one way that would make that happen is if all of us, instead of doing only one or two people, we actually appointed five members. Five members would result in a steering committee that was 80% residents and 20% other interest. So that's the motion that I would like to make. And
so there's
and
a motion on the table, Commissioner, again.
Yes, sir. I'll make an amendment.
So you have to make an amendment.
No, I understand. Please don't be so rude, Mayor.
I'm just
Of course I'll make an amendment. But I just wanted to first discuss why I'll be making that amendment is because I do want to see the steering committee representative of the community, both tax base and land mass. And if we do this, it will allow us to reach out into all of those planning areas. And I'm even willing to pull from a hat. I don't mind that because I think it's that important that all of our planning areas be represented. So personally, I'm up to saying I'll take whatever planning area you blindly assign me, and I will go and I will learn which residents are willing to serve. But the amendment that I would like to make is, I'd actually like to make two amendments. My first amendment is that the steering committee represent four out of five members, which is 80%, residents and representative of neighborhood areas in Winter Park. My second amendment would...
Wait, say that again.
My amendment would be that our steering committee, four out of five members, represent neighborhood districts in Winter Park.
Four out of five. Out of each of us recommending five names.
That would be
so
a way to do it.
People
that would be
18.
Yes.
And other representatives or not?
I'm sorry?
You're going to have all these other representatives or not?
Absolutely. I think they're important.
And 25 plus 8. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's important. Because you're only going to get 75% turnout after this thing drags on.
Is there a second to this? Commissioner Cooper, no second?
Gracious goodness. What's wrong with it, guys?
It's too many.
Yeah, it's
that's
Congress. That's right. Not a steering committee.
Okay.
And Commissioner, go on. She has the floor for a second amendment. She doesn't want us to interrupt, so go for it, Commissioner.
I just want to strike the first portion of the basic motion that says to change not currently serving on any other boards. I would like to see that left in. So
you're moving to amend to leave it in. Is there a second?
Yes.
I'll second that for discussion.
Thank you, Tom.
Commissioner, if I could go back to the first one. I really, there's always different ways to approach it. And I just feel that this initial steering committee, I don't want to see 75 or 50% or 60% participation. To me, this initial steering committee has got to be there all the time, and that's why those choices are going to be so hard, and they're going to be so important. And I'm sitting here saying, if we're getting 25 and then 8 more, that's 30 some people on a steering committee that's going to meet supposedly regularly and keep up with all this. And my experience with that larger group is it's very difficult to keep moving forward because you're always having to take two steps back to bring the people that weren't at the last meeting back up to speed. So I'm really uncomfortable with more than the 10 that the mayor has suggested or the 12 that Dory initially suggested and these other people being in there. To me, that's as large a steering committee.
I
think there'll be plenty of other smaller groups and whatnot that can be inclusive. In fact, if we don't have any smaller groups, we've probably failed. So I see this as this is the brain trust of this group, and their challenge will be to go out into the community and reach out to these other groups. And there may be other subcommittees and whatnot, but again, that was my reasoning for not seconding that.
It's just merely the size of what I perceive. And I did think about that as I was considering.
That's just where I was.
All right. Well, and the thing that I noticed, and it's so important, is that if we want a steering committee that reflects the community is 80% residential. So another way to do that would be if these additional seats were filled with residents who happen to be a large employer, residents who happen to run the cultural, the arts, and the heritage organizations.
If I would think that will happen. I guess I had read that into that.
But you can't read anything into it. You must define what you want.
Well, Betsy Owens is a wonderful example of what matters.
Right? So. Absolutely.
She's not a resident. So.
No, I understand that, and that's one of the disadvantages. But if we're not going to assign enough neighborhood representatives to the steering committee, then another way to do it. And I can name people who fit every one of these.
Oh, I could too.
Sure.
And the assumption is that on this line of thought is that none of these people would be residences. And I just can't imagine that we would not, during the course of it, that the steering committee that we are going to appoint ourselves, having heard our discussions tonight, would at least not take that in consideration and say, we ought to look first for a resident who represents a faith-based organization or a resident who represents higher education and not necessarily go out and say, we're going to find somebody totally askew from that.
May I suggest that we've already, this amendment's come up, it's been defeated, and we just move on to something else?
All right. I would like to amend the main motion. I would like to no, this isn't the weeds.
Do you have a second amendment, a third amendment, Commissioner? Please.
I would like to make an amendment that says the additional seats, the emphasis will be on selecting Winter Park residents that meet the criteria of the additional seats.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
So Reverend Dawkins, may he rest in peace, was not a citizen of our community. So we I have the floor, Commissioner. So he wouldn't be on our visioning committee if that amendment passes. Our fire department, 65 of 68 of our firefighters don't live in our city. We would never even consider them if that amendment passes. Betsy Owens, great example. Leader, big leader in our community, doesn't live in Winter Park. She wouldn't qualify for this. I don't think we want to limit those people on at this point, prematurely from weighing in on the vision or even the process of our city.
If I could, Mr. Mayor, to me, this is a vote on establishing the initial either 10 or 17 members of a steering committee, not of partaking in the visioning process, but who are the either 10 or however many of these we add on to it, potentially 7 more, 8 more. There's 18 people that we would entrust to be our steering committee. And that does not preclude anyone else from participating in any way, shape, or form in the overall visioning process. I think I don't want to expand this and say we're talking about the entire process. Right now, what I read this is we are trying to establish who would serve, who we would like to appoint to a steering committee, and how many of those people are there.
Correct.
So I don't want to say that either Reverend Dawkins or Betsy Owens or my daughter that's at Clemson right now couldn't take part in this just because they're not on the steering committee. This is the 1% that we're asking to help.
I'm arguing those people could all be great members of this committee, and if this amendment passed, you wouldn't have them on that. Commissioner Sprinkle.
I thought before what we said is, okay, each of us gets two, if this goes forward, each of us gets two recommendations. Surely we'll be wise enough to not have them all on the same street. So we would look at that. And then secondly, I thought what you said was then the steering committee will fill in these slots, and these are the 8 recommendations that you have in place.
Correct.
Now, you may even change one of those. I don't have a big hard time with that. I'd like the steering committee to make those recommendations. So we're really just voting on whether or not we're going to have 2 slots each.
Correct.
And then the steering committee, when it's made up of those 10 people, would then look at these memberships, and certainly I think everybody here, no one is going to argue that we want to always represent as many neighborhoods and as many Winter Park residents as possible. But we also want to make sure we have a great committee. And I'm going to trust those people because I can think of 2 people I'd like to put on there.
Do you know 3 I'm looking for another?
No, but on my way out today, George said, are you sure somebody else can appoint me?
And
I said, yes, I'm sure they can.
Cooper's point, her residency is just landmass. I don't think that's what we use to determine. Excuse me, Commissioner. I don't think that's what we use to determine what the best thing for our city is. You know, we have 31,000 jobs in our city versus 28,000 residents. Should we have more people from commerce? I don't think so. I think this is a stab at it, a good stab at it.
It's a good start, and if I understood Commissioner Cooper's amendment, it was that as the steering committee looks to fill these other positions, they would give strong...
No, she said they'll be residents.
I did not hear that. I thought she said that, and we may have to go back to recording. My understanding of what she said was that they would, in effect, give preference to a resident if that were...
Well, she did not say preference. So if she wants to restate that, that's fine. She didn't say that the last time we talked about this. So if she wants to talk about preference, that's great.
Mayor, what do you think I said?
Commissioner, you did not say preference. I'm not going to ask the record to be reread, but you made the amendment.
I don't mind saying preference. That's fine. My point was that these additional seats, that first priority would be given to Winter Park residents. Thank you. I wasn't trying to be difficult. I really couldn't remember the exact words that I had used and wanted to please as many as possible.
Okay, let's open the further comment. Open the floor for citizen comment.
Joe Terranova, 151 North Virginia Avenue. My feeling is that you ought to keep the process as open as possible and not limit who can be on the committee or whose ideas can or cannot be accepted. The final decision as to what the vision will be decided by you. No one else. The commission will make that decision. And I don't think it's a good idea to limit by some arbitrary formula, whatever that is, the people that can serve on the committee or the people who can present ideas. I would like to think in my own case, I was not born here. I came here 34 years ago when I was 56 years old. I looked around to determine where I wanted to live to retire. Before I started looking at the process, I didn't have a clue about Winter Park. I never heard of Winter Park. But when I started looking into it, I found out this is where I wanted to retire. And I came here. But I'd hate to think that in those 56 years before I came here, before I was involved in this community, that I would not have been able to come up with an idea that would be worthy of consideration or visioning process. I'd also hate to think that someone who lives just a few blocks from here, but outside the municipal boundaries of Winter Park, that their ideas could not be accepted. So I say keep your process open. You will make the final decisions as what the visioning will be. Just don't limit your options. Thank you.
Thank you. Other citizens?
Sally Flynn, 1400 Highland Road. I do not feel that we need to scratch board members from being on the commission, on the steering committee, but I do think that there are many, many qualified people in the community that are not serving on boards now because they applied for the boards, but they never got a chance to serve. And I would like to see this process really reach out to people who have not had a chance to serve on the boards. And there are lots of them. I hope it will stay open. I hope it will be really represented by the citizens. We are the taxpayers. Outsiders, happy to have their input for ideas, but I don't think they should be forming our vision. Thank you.
Other citizens? Seeing no more, I'll close the floor for public comment. Okay, we have two amendments that have seconds to it that we would add back the striking of the not currently serving on any boards, so that, in other words, if that passed, and then the main motion passed is that they would not be able to serve on city boards. Are we clear on what we're voting for?
Yes, sir.
We're voting for the amendments first.
The amendments first, and then we'll vote on the main motion as amended or not amended. So the request is to add back that we would only pick from people who are not serving on city boards. Clerk will read the roll on the amendment.
Commissioner Leary?
No.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
No.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
No.
Mayor Bradley?
No, that fails. The second one is that additional seats, or the additional seats will be, and I had read it initially that it would be only residents, but the commissioner said it was preferred for residents. So we'll take it as preferred for residents as we seek the additional representatives. That's the additional seats may include representatives of large employers and other kinds of things.
I just wanted to check in the second.
Yes. Is that correct, Commissioner McMackin?
Yes, that where possible, preference would be given to residents.
The commissioner said she didn't recall what she said. I'm assuming that she meant
so
preference.
That is what we're saying. Where possible, that residents would be preferred.
Yes.
Okay. For those additional seven spots. that word.
And they're not eight. Seven, but
whatever that.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure how you do that. Do you weight it? And I just don't know.
No, I
that's why I can't support just, it because that's
okay.
How you do it. So.
That's okay.
Just like you do.
Thank you.
Okay, clerk will read the roll on the amendment.
Sorry. Commissioner Leary?
No.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Okay, now on the main amendment as the main motion as amended, which gives preference to the other seats for residents. Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, may I just go back? I'm still confused on how we indicate a preference and if we weight it. How do they do that?
I guess that's the committee. The committee
was
going to select that.
Boards.
So.
But we do our board
but our boards are very clear.
No, the committee itself, the 10 are going to pick the 8. So.
Okay. Now you're giving that direction.
It'll be their decision.
Thank you.
And I don't know if it matters where they live or what house they live in or what size or how long they've been here.
It could be any of those. Mr. Yeah. Mayor, the one question I on as we're going forward on this, there were 10 representatives to be selected by the commission. And I don't think we decided
how we do that.
And I'm bringing that up. Does each commissioner select two? Do we?
Well, I think staff's going to have to tell us when, and we're going to have to nominate two, and maybe you should nominate three in case somebody else picks your second one. So,
I mean, is that – I'm looking at my other commissioners. I don't think Doria really cares how we come up with 10, but I guess do we each get a
– When would you like to start nominating?
Why don't we bring two names to the next meeting?
I mean, I'm fair.
I don't know how we're going to get those outlying neighborhoods if we don't – You know, if we don't all agree to say, yes, I'm going to do my neighborhood plus I'm going to do one of the outlying neighborhoods, because I thought, well, at least we could do our own, but then I realized, no, we even live in the same neighborhoods.
I actually already have an outlying neighborhood person, so I got to cover them.
I just disdain these terms. I disdain these terms. Outlying neighborhoods.
I mean outside of the boundaries of downtown, because I hate to see the only the same people.
That's why I'm not going to go into outlying neighborhoods. Yeah.
And we have more than 140 people serving on our boards. I don't think it's
I'm going to get two people.
Okay. We'll do two for the next one. Is that fair?
Yes.
So fair. We will be working through this at our next meeting for steering committee appointments, because I'd like to plan on.
That was as fun as this, yeah.
Possibly when we would be having our first get-together.
Okay. Sure, let's bring in two names next week.
Thank you.
Two names next week, next 2 weeks.
Okay, I'm going to take the citizen comments now. The citizens wishing to speak to us about matters that are not on our agenda are welcome to.
Joan Kaysen, 1915 Woodcrest. Our media alert today at 2600 Lee Road gave who, what, when, where. When is the information about the financial, does it life hour? Does it get appraised? What do we do? How long before we do that?
I'm not sure we understand your question. Maybe you can address it to Mr.
Well, it's going to be demolished, right?
Right, correct, on Wednesday.
Okay. How long before it is addressed to be sold to
We're going to put up a for sale sign immediately. And, you know, it's already been appraised. We have an appraisal. You know, we're going to be trying to get what we paid for it out of it. But, obviously, you know, the market will determine that.
Appraisal same as the price we bought it?
Yes, it was appraised at... No. We paid $990,000 for it. I think it appraised at $830,000, if I recall, something right in that range.
But you're not going to let it lie.
Right. We're going to put it up for sale immediately.
That was my question.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to discuss questions that are on our agenda with us? Great. I'll close the floor for public comment. Rule of the commission, what would you all like to do? You want a break or you want to keep going?
I could do either.
Do a quickie?
Sure.
Okay, so let's take a 15-minute break.
I thought of nothing else.
A 15-minute break. we'll reconvene at 5:35. Thank
just
you.
Keep
me away.
Okay, we're back in session. We're going to take up item 10D. Mr. Knight, I don't know if you want to address the state legislative priorities with us or if someone else is going to do that.
I'll do that, Mr. Mayor. In your packet, you have my recommended list of legislative priorities. And obviously, the first one on the list is the quiet zones, which, given the information we got last week after this went out to you, that one can probably come off of the list. So
success for 2015. Right.
But I'm asking for your approval of the list. If there's any things you'd like to add or subtract from the list, we'd be glad to do that as part of this, and we'll get that.
Mr. Knight, my only question, and we've not debated this as a commission, but I know this has been on staff's priority for a long time, is the West Fairbanks designated as a local city road. I know there's pros and cons to that. I mean, 2 years ago, it was worth $2 million or $1 million for us in paving, and it also was a hassle around bikes and other things. I mean, why not Orange then? Why not 1792?
Well, I mean, we already took Orange. Used to be a state road, and so did, as I remember, Lakemont at one point was a state road. And I mean, there are others that we've done, and it really is about control and about, you know, if we. You remember when we wanted to put medians and had very stringent rules of where the median cuts could be. We'd have more flexibility if that were a city road. Before we actually did it, of course, there would be an analysis given to the commission to show the life cycle cost of that road and what it would cost us to repave it and those types of things.
So on the off chance that when we go to Tallahassee, maybe they're going to give us what we want, I might want to argue for doing that analysis only because...
Right.
And it probably won't get done in this legislative session, probably, unless there's, I don't know if it can be done by staff or not. But
no, it would have to come back to the commission.
But that's the only thing. I've seen it both ways. I'd like to know that remains your position. So
I would certainly support that, Mayor. I've always been very curious about the cost benefit of what we're taking on in the way of responsibility when we do that.
And am I confused? Is 1795 supposed to be 1792, or is that really 1792?
Where is that, Mr. Mayor?
The third item is assist with widening of State Road 426 between 1795 and Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yes, that should be 1792. Thank you.
And since I don't know my number, State Road 426, for those listening at home, is
Fairbanks
and
Paloma.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, a couple questions,
please, and then ultimately a motion at some point.
Go ahead.
Ask your questions.
Randy, we've got state legislative priorities, and under there we list acquisition of the post office property. Is that really a state priority? Is that a federal priority?
If they'll give us $10 million to build a museum there, we'll.
No, but I mean, no, as far as if we're listing what I saw as state legislative priorities,
yes,
is that really a federal, you know, would we be?
We used to only have it on our federal list. A couple of years ago, we added it to this list just in case they could give us money for park acquisition or whatever. So we've had it on both lists. It is
okay.
Getting the post office to agree to sell is certainly
a federal
issue. But getting funds to acquire it could be either.
And the only other question I had just to us as a group here is there any reason to prioritize these for our state lobbyists? I don't know that answer. That's why I'm asking.
So we'll hear the yes, and I'll tell you the no.
And
I tell you why I say yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What did we get this last session? We got exactly what we asked for. We went up there and we said we'd like to have $400,000 for working over in Mead Garden, and that's what we got put in the budget. It will not. You won't get anything if you don't get in the budget, and the budget's already out, folks. So if we don't have something in there real soon, just like last year, we're not going to get anything. So we have to. If we want a line item number in the budget, we need to ask for what that is now. Because if you say new library, they're going to go, what? New library? Where are you going to put a new library? I mean, you've got to ask specifically. And then you got to get somebody to get it in, just like we did last year. And so I would suggest last year when we were up there and all of that happened.
We lobbied hard for two things.
And that's what we got.
And thanks to some real effort on some folks' part, we got them. And I just, not being in Tallahassee all the time, I don't know if that's a detriment or it's a positive to say this is...
So
here's our goal for this year. This is what we really want. And
so
maybe a different goal next year.
Sprinkle is correct. But the other reason why you... The other reason why you don't necessarily want to prioritize is I think we want our lobbyists to be as much as possible advancing all of these and then really determine which of these can get advanced. So as we've identified, new library is probably DOA. But he may say, you know what, I can get you three or five of those and then ask us to lobby, et cetera. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong way to do this to answer your question. And yes, if we wanted to prioritize these, I don't know what we would use as priorities, but we'd be here all night trying to do
that. No, I just didn't know because we've always had just this list, and I just didn't know if it was beneficial to give our lobbyists the priority or whether, as you've said, Mr. Mayor, say, here's eight items, get what you can.
And I take a stab at it. I think everybody's right. and I think the best way to go about it is probably to open up the dialogue with our lobbyists and find out exactly where. Because they will cross. We may have one priority right now, and they'll cross them all.
And to Commissioner Sprinkle's point, this really needs to be 2015-16 state legislative priorities.
Yes.
I mean, frankly, with the exception of maybe the local bill and some of these other things, you know, we need to start working in a two-year cycle because some of the stuff has to get done in the fall before. And by the way, the legislative session next year starts in January. So committees start in August this year versus normally October. So really the priorities of the legislative delegations, everything else is going to be established probably within a few days after the session ends at the 1st of May. So May, June is when they're going to do that, and committees start in August. So that's probably where we need to start looking. I'm not suggesting that we may not get some of this stuff. But. And by the way, sometimes they put money aside, and then we can apply for it. So that's equally good, too. Commissioner Leary.
Mr. Mayor, I think there's also an opportunity. Again, some of the issues we face as a community in the region are regional issues. And I think we need to start thinking a little bit bigger about it when we approach our legislative delegation.
That's how we got quiet zones done.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what I was going to say. Bringing that up, I think there might be an opportunity to start talking to them about traffic and car flow. There's smart signalization technologies. There's other things out there right now, and I'm not sure if the state, especially as we look at I-4 and what's happening through I-4 through our region in the coming years. And again, Randy, help me. I don't know if Bill can... possibly, or John, can give us any kind of insight as to what the legislature has up their sleeves or what they can possibly look to, because our entire region, and especially the next couple of years, is going to get really impacted pretty significantly, and I think we need to kind of come together as a region and approach our leaders up there and try to help them find a solution for us. So is it possible? Is it worth having a discussion with them?
Absolutely.
Okay. Some of these roads and the impact we're feeling as a community are, again, not because of us, but because of everybody around us. So I think we should probably see what they can do to help with that.
So I, for one, am going to move it as is without a necessary priority. And my logic for that is, so, for example, opposed Public Service Commission regulation, I would say that would be my number one priority no matter what. But I also want to get Mead Garden, Lake Lillian and restoration. So I don't know that I necessarily need to make it. I mean, if we did prioritize it, I would say high, middle, low. So I've moved the list as is. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper.
I'd like an eight amendment.
And you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I just know that in the process, and this is my amendment I'd like to make. I'd like to amend that we make our first priority Mead Garden, Lake Lillian restoration with a set amount of money and go to Bill Peoples and our folks and ask for where they think we can get funding to work on the second phase of that. We got funding last year for the first phase, but I'd like us to find out if there's a way we can fund some of the second phase of Mead Garden.
I would second that. And so, you know, maybe in the future when we look at projects and maybe we look at legislative matters, we look at them differently. Because obviously a pension reform may impact our city greatly, but it may not. I mean, that might be something, especially from, we should have broad support for that from multiple municipalities. But I agree with of the projects, that probably is the first one. I seconded it, but if you want to second it, you're welcome to.
And I would add, with Amendment 1 passing this past year, it makes the Howell Branch Creek property project a very viable project.
Where is that?
It's number 5.
The fifth bullet down.
Randy, would you
it's right after
okay,
me.
Could
I
you
see
clarify
it.
That? Because there is some talk in the community that the reason we are rezoning that is so the developer that is on the opposite side of the creek can develop the property. So would you kind of explain our rationale for the...
I didn't even know there was a developer on the other side of the creek.
That's what I was just going to say. I didn't even know.
I don't think it's in our city if it is.
It's not.
Right. So
the purpose of
absolutely not. That's we don't believe that property to be developable by anyone, but we do believe it would be a great nature preserve, a great opportunity to make that creek more navigable than it is today and usable by the residents of the Winter Park and the region.
Thank you.
So it would be a park project, and we would go in there and clean it up and make it a very viable nature preserve.
Sarah, I appreciate that amendment as well, and I will vote for that. I also think that, per Randy's mention, that we ought to let Bill and John know that, yes, we have a prime piece of property that would fall under
the latest
amendment there. So, but I'm with you. I'm
And if we can use it to buy parkland in downtown Central Park, we'll do that too.
Sure,
right.
We did have an amendment and a second to that. Further discussion? I'm going to open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to us as we speak to our legislators on your behalf. Good news is you can do that at your will, too. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. If there was an amendment, we'll vote on that first. The Mead Gardens moves up to our number one priority. So maybe that's like saying 1A and 1B, Sarah, but I support you.
So the water projects.
The amendment is that our number one project would be Mead Gardens. Clerk, read the roll on the amendment.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Brown?
Yes. Now the main amendment main motion is presented. Clerk, read the roll with the amendment.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Brown?
Yes. Ms. Reichman, the second reading of the grease trap ordinance.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending portions of Chapter 102, Utilities, Article 4, Sewers and Sewage Disposal of the Code of Ordinances, as well as creating the City of Winter Park Grease Management Ordinance Sections 102-115.01 through 102-115.14, providing for severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
Will the Commission on this matter?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
I have a question of staff. I had to step out to use the restroom facilities the last time this was voted. This is not requiring retrofitting, right? I actually was asked by a restaurateur on the avenue, and they said this would be $40,000 to them if we enforced it. So is this for all new, or...?
It's both, actually. It wouldn't require you to go back and retrofit unless something was wrong with what you had currently, or if you were building new, adding on to.
And how do we know if something was wrong?
We do inspect them pretty regularly. It may also require, if they had to pull a construction permit to do something and we went out there and noticed that the top was caving in or something along those nature, then we would require that they replace it.
So I appreciate that. I just don't want to create a whole bunch of new costs to people in the city, whereas this is a good thing to do. I think over time, I guess we have to keep up with all this.
This is really not adding anything. What we're doing is we're trying to keep up with what City of Orlando requires, because the majority of our flow goes to City of Orlando, so we therefore have to follow their regulations. But we're also adding a little bit of management ability to regulate the installation, sizing, inspection of grease traps.
So Dave, and I'm not saying this in any pejorative way, but if staff goes in and inspect from your area, I guess that's where the inspections come from, or they come from code enforcement, or where?
They would come from utilities.
And you say, and I'm not saying they're doing anything immoral or illegal or anything like that, but they say this is bad. What process does a restaurateur have to bring in another plumber and says, no, this meets the, I mean, is there a,
well, we would,
is there, are you judge, jury, and executioner on that matter?
In many cases, yes, but when I say we go in there and inspect it, we do regular samples where we take a sample and either they do or we send them out to a laboratory, and there's criteria that they cannot exceed as far as the BOD, grease, solids, etc. Those criteria are set and they're required in order for us to be in compliance with City of Orlando industrial waste pretreatment ordinances. And or if there's a structural problem with an existing grease trap, you know, that's pretty evident. I mean, it's you know, concrete's deteriorating. I mean, there are things that are relatively easy to determine. The only other thing that would that trigger something like that would be if a restaurant wanted to add 50 seats or 100 seats, and we said, okay, well, your existing grease trap, based on calculations for sizing of those structures, doesn't meet the requirements anymore, so then we would have to require that they add another one, increase the size of this one, et cetera. It also does give us a little bit of latitude, staff on staff's way, for areas that are just physically constrained by site. For example, Park Avenue is a good example where if there simply is, it's impossible to add one, then we would look at some alternative things that they could do to get the best treatment they could without necessarily doing something that's impossible.
So I appreciate the intent. I just don't want to face restaurateurs who said, now I got to spend $40,000 to comply with this ordinance. So I'm not suggesting I'm going to vote against it. I just want to make sure. And I guess I would say I'm a little concerned. I understand why we need an inspection function, but it seems like the inspection function and the enforcement function in good policy would be separated. So I don't know who ultimately enforces you to fix this, et cetera. I can understand why we would want that inspected by staff, but it seems like somebody ought to be able to, and I don't know who are experts at grease management, but if our inspector comes in and says you need a new one, it just feels like we're stuck. We're stuck with a $40,000 bill. So that doesn't feel friendly to me. Maybe it's the right thing to do, but it doesn't feel friendly.
What in our practice, what we do is we work very closely with these restaurateurs and or other businesses to try and work up solutions that are both not cost prohibitive and also meet our needs. In other words, if somebody is routinely discharging into our system that creates a grease problem, increased maintenance, you know, any number of issues, and or it exceeds the strength of the waste that or City of Orlando will accept, we have to require them to pre-treat it. My experience is not that it's not common for someone to be doing what they're supposed to be doing and suddenly have to come up with a $40,000 bill unless they have something that is just major.
I hear you. Do we have a giant grease trap from the city before everything goes into the?
No, each individual business is required to pre-treat. We have a treatment plant that does treat all the waste, and or Orlando or Altamont Springs or whoever is treating our waste. But we also have a treatment plant. We don't have a large interceptor. The problem is you really can't do that because the grease will build up in the system, and you know it collects throughout in lift stations, lines, etc.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense that you'd have to do it as you go, but it also seems like we ought to have a giant one. My other question in terms of sustainability, are we doing anything to capture grease? I understand it's
there are some programs out there where people will actually collect grease from fryers and that sort of thing. This is a different kind of grease. This is the kind of grease that you wash off of your dishes and whatnot, and it collects this. You know, it just goes down the drain. It's not capturable except in a grease trap. I'm not aware of anybody who actually recycles that material.
Great. Those are my questions. Thank you, Dave, for answering them. Will the commission on this matter?
I move for approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Commission discussion? Hearing none, I'll open the floor for public comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote?
Yes, sir.
Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. I would look to staff. When we have both an inspection and an enforcement function, as we do what it appears to be in our water and other systems, it can leave a bad taste in people's mouths. I'm not suggesting that anything sinister is happening, but in trees, we had a tree board that said, I disagree with the actions, and I either want to take my tree down or not. We have checks and balances at other departments. I would suggest that we look at, not just one voice, but I would suggest that we look at a similar process, that at least somebody would have the opportunity to say, the inspector said this, but I don't know if I agree, and this is what, you know, to be friendly. I don't want to create a quarter in there. Thank you. Ms. Briggs.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is a public hearing for Unicorp to deal with the conditional use for redevelopment of the Mount Vernon property. And the overhead has basically the site plan. The applicant's going to walk you through many more of the detailed plans of the project. But as you read in the staff report, this is a property that's zoned commercial C3, 3.58 acres. They are basically building a project that meets all of our codes, which is very nice to say. They are meeting all of the setback requirements. They are meeting the maximum floor area ratio, which is 45%. They're just a little bit more than 44%. And interestingly, of that, 24% is the floor area ratio in the retail and restaurant buildings. And the other 20% is the floor area, the floor to ceiling within the parking garage. So that's the breakdown. So they are coming away with about 37,500 square feet of building, but 28 of it is common area, and so really leasable is about 34,600 square feet. There was one small variance that they had asked for at P&Z, which was to reduce the size of the landscape islands and the surface parking lot. P&Z recommended against that. It really only impacts the parking to the extent that they would lose four parking places. So instead of 315, we'd be down to 311. But the entire project is based on meeting the code for 300 spaces. So there's a couple of extra, just in case we find locating some kind of mechanical or other equipment, they lose a space or two in the process. And of that 300 spaces, 30 of them are allocated based on the 1-for-250 for the retail stores. They have the 40 spaces in this total that the city required them to provide for employees over at Lakeside across the street. And then 230 of the spaces are for the four restaurants that you see in the plans. And so that translates into 690 seats in the restaurants that they will be able to allocate amongst the various tenants. And so we did do some checking on that number, whether the sizes of these restaurants shown, whether it worked, because another one of our codes is 50 square feet of customer area, whichever is greater. And it did appear from the floor plans that we looked at that the breakdown and the seating that would result from the interior space matches those 690 seats. May not be quite as many seats as they would like to have for outside patio dining, but they will just have to, based on the tenant needs, decide whether they want a space to be a little bit smaller and be Brio with outdoor seating, or whether they want the building to be a little bit bigger and be Cheesecake Factory with all the seating inside. So that will really be the developer and tenant choices as we go through the process. This is the preliminary conditional use. That's important because this is really just the initial plan, and you know that there's another go-round where the more detailed plans come back. We are going to take a lot harder look at the parking garage in terms of the design of it, and there's a little bit of concern about the dead end that we see in there, a little bit of concern about how they're going to turn around at the top of the garage if we find out that all the spaces are filled. And also we need, you know, to spend some more time on the details of the lighting plan, exterior elevations and such. And really those exterior elevations are important on all sides because most of the people are going to see the rear of these buildings when they park in the garage or in the parking lot. So the same kind of nice architectural treatment that you see in the front looks for this project, we will be making sure that we see in the rear look as well, since that's really the entrance for most people that are using it. And of course, you know, we get the entire patio plans that come in later. We get the landscape plan, and we see what the signage is, lighting, all those details that come back and for the final conditional use. This is really the entitlements. Can they proceed with the project further on down the road? When we were at planning and zoning, most of the comments that we heard from the public dealt with traffic. Of course, that's most of the comments we hear about almost any kind of development. Because this is heavily loaded with restaurants and because they do generate more customers and thus more cars, there is going to be a net increase over and above the traffic that the Mount Vernon was attracting of about 934 new trips per day. And so we have had our city traffic consultant, Chris Simino, who's here tonight to help us to fill in the blanks, look at their traffic study and a look at the street sections in this vicinity to advise us on what needs to happen to make the traffic flow better and especially to make it safer for pedestrians crossing back and forth between the two projects. So you did note that there are several traffic conditions that are attached to the approval, one of which is to improve that signal so that it is protected left-hand turns at every north, south, east, and west, so we have safer turning movements than we have out there today. Also, there's going to be better pedestrian markings for the crosswalks in terms of improving those. Aesthetically, we'd like to go to mast arms, so there's a contribution of $50,000 from the developer to help us go to the more aesthetic new traffic light. And then also there is a contribution as we are working this signal by signal to go to the more adaptive or smart signal technology that it senses the cars more than just the old-fashioned timers. So you do have a recommendation from planning and zoning for approval with 10 conditions. Those were the four traffic ones, and I won't go through the other ones. They're in your staff report. And with that, it does come to you positively recommended. So I'll see what questions you have.
Questions of staff?
Mr. Mayor, if I can interrupt, I apologize. But this is a quasi-judicial hearing. Make sure that if there have been any ex-party communications, they'd be disclosed at this time.
I've spoken with the developer.
I have also
spoken with the developer.
I've spoken with staff.
I have spoken with staff.
And I've spoken with staff.
And I have also.
I wouldn't dream of not speaking with staff.
Questions of Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Briggs, on the 40 spaces that are allocated for the development across the street, I know in are they? Is there any special demarcation in the garage that identifies those? I know we have this similar agreement with other developments around the community, and I just don't know. We say there's 40 spaces, but are there 40 spaces that say employees only or whatever? Or
well, what we've done...
How have we handled this elsewhere?
We've required a parking management plan so that we know how that garage is going to be managed, how many are going to be signed and reserved, where the different ones are going to be allocated, and also so that we're not surprised one day that all of a sudden they're putting up gates and charging for parking. So that parking management plan, which will come in the final, is going to control those.
Okay. Thank you.
I would think that would be self-regulating, Tom.
Yeah, I know that...
If it was my parking garage and the customers came, I think I'd want to give them better spots than the front first floor or whatever. So
whatever.
Logically...
It was a condition that we had worked on very hard from across the street, and I just want to make sure that somehow we were recognizing that. I do have a question for our traffic engineer when we get to that point, but I know there's a problem.
Let's go now. Let's bring them up if you got questions. Let's go to the box. Let's not waste our time going in between seats, please.
Chris, I actually spent some time out there Sunday afternoon watching the goings on, and my only really question is on Harper Street, where the intersection with Morris Boulevard.
that's still, regardless of this development happening or anything else, that's just a tough spot.
And I also last week went out and observed that intersection as well. It's kind of hard to find this place.
Harper and Morris, or where?
Harper and Morris. Yes, sir. And regardless of this development, I was there on a Sunday afternoon and just sat out there and walked the property and just watched the goings on. And pedestrians were actually crossing 79. You know, they're getting crossed, and that was working fine and whatnot. But that's still, for lack of a better term, at times can be a crapshoot getting across Morris.
Right. And
I don't know. Is there a solution for that, or a safer way to treat that intersection? Because the other side, the north side of Harper, is offset.
Right.
So even if you want to go straight, you're doing this kind of jog through there. You're kind of getting out into a suicide lane if you want to turn left. I just, from your observations, is there...
I did observe some of the vehicles that were going, they were going through on Harper, like you're saying. And there actually were some crashes in the last 12 months associated with that movement. One of them was before the Trader Joe's opened.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them didn't deal with going all the way across and were impacts on the westbound side of Morris. One was an eastbound Morris collision. There is a valley gutter on the other side, which makes people tend to slow down as they get to that point. So if a car is coming along westbound Morris, that would incur, you know, makes it a little bit less what they're expecting because the car all of a sudden slows in front of them. I don't think in a roadway like that where it's minor, I mean, obviously if this was a place that was really a busy arterial, you would normally not have that median opening that close.
Yeah.
But then you have a corridor like 79-2 where you have that type of situation all up and down. So, I mean, it's not unusual to have that, and certainly there are things that can be done to improve it, like maybe restricting the traffic to ride out only on Harper. But I would reserve a comment on that or recommendation until after I see the revised design and how the operation of the intersection works, because part of what was happening was associated with the queues being long on for turning left.
Yes.
And nobody in the through lane, the right lane. It's not quite like that now. They're a little bit more balanced because Trader Joe's has some through traffic blocking the right on red. So I think we can, when we get revised plans and they do some intersection modeling with the requirements that have been already recommended, we need to look at what those queues are like and see if it still looks like it's an issue, and then reserve as part of the design process what we might do to improve it.
Great. Thank you very much. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions of staff?
Chris, can you talk to me about the intersection at Morse at 1792? In general, my concern is four restaurants, happy hour, rush hour traffic. I see the parking, and I appreciate the work in the back there. But how do we get those people cleared off 1792 so they're not backing into traffic if they're queuing up to get into the parking lot?
Well, right now that intersection operates fairly well. It's about the level of service B. When I've been out there, I have not once seen cars not get cleared.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there's times when 1792, I mean, there's delay downstream, but there's nobody at the intersection because it's backed up elsewhere. So there are times when it clears on every cycle fairly well. The restaurants, even though that I don't know that they're necessarily going to be as big of a deal during the peak hour. It depends on the kind of restaurant it is. You know, if it's a nice dining establishment, probably it's going to have a peak a little bit later. So it might not interact with the peak traffic. I noticed when I've been out there, the intersection is a little bit more of an issue at lunchtime than it is in the PM peak right now. And that's probably because of people going into Trader Joe's or even Shake Shack. And there's a lot of activity because they're high turnover type things. You can get food at Trader Joe's to eat. But I think that this stuff here is all separated from that signal to some extent, and it's a little bit more of an ideal scenario because you have access to other roads that are in the grid, so it's going to disperse traffic differently. They're not forced to come out at the signal.
So if we've got northbound traffic on 1792 stopping at Morse, it's just two lanes still. We're not talking about a turn lane.
Right.
So... And we have a turn into the facility here after the first restaurant?
Yes, correct.
And is that just a drop-off? I was confused by that.
One of the recommendations is a right-in, right-out, not allowing lefts out of there.
But that does not... What is the purpose of that circle? Is that just a drop-off?
That's just ornamental. You drive right through to the parking garage.
Sorry.
That's just ornamental pavement. You drive right through to the parking garage.
So it is ornamental. It's a drop-off.
No, well, you can drive right through to the back.
You can drive through to the back.
I'm not sure what the purpose of a drop-off would be. Usually people go into a restaurant, they're going to park, and they're going to go eat.
No, I understand. I didn't.
But if you have a senior or something, you drop them off.
Potentially, and then go park or something.
I drop people off all the time.
Yeah, I do that too, especially if it's raining.
So that's so you're not concerned about any queuing of the cars. Can we put that in to make sure that people aren't dropping off there? Because that's my concern. If people are queuing up there and dropping people off 10 feet into the 15 feet into the circle, they're coming in here and dropping off, and people are getting queued up behind them, there's a line out on 1792. That's my concern, is backing up traffic on 1792. And I don't know whether that's taken care of through a turn lane or whether that's taken care of through enforcement of a no-drop zone there. But that's a major concern of mine, is people queuing back out on 1792, especially during peak hours.
Well, it's something we can look at during the design to make sure that we're not creating something that's encouraging that. I mean, this is obviously a very generous throat.
Sure.
You could have a site like this before you, where that's everything to get in and out of this place, and that's not the case here.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not sure how they're going to design the appearance of the restaurants, whether there's going to be a better, you know, because normally you wouldn't drop people off there. If you were going to drop them off for the restaurant, like we're talking, you'd probably want to go to the area where you would enter that facility, not.
Well, I think for that first restaurant on the right there, that would be an ideal.
Potentially for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'd get.
And I can't tell you that maybe the first few days when they have a big event or something and they try to create all this, you know, hype about it, that something like that won't occur when something's new. But I don't think it's a sustainable issue.
Well, again, that's a concern of mine, especially during these little downpours that we have occasionally down here, that people will drop somebody off and then go into the parking garage and park. So.
Right.
Again, it's. I'm not sure how that's addressed, and maybe that's for second reading as we move forward.
Yeah, when we look at the design, I mean, there may be access into the parking garage for that one as well. That might be more ideal. I mean, that's what I would do if it was raining.
That's going to be an issue for me.
Other questions of staff or our traffic consultant?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Commissioner Cooper.
Jeff, my question is about, I don't have one for you, Chris. I'm comfortable with this. Thank you. The Morse design guidelines, it says in the staff report, doesn't have a page, but it's about 165 of our packet. It says that for the final conditional use, the application of Morse Boulevard design guidelines should be undertaken. And my only question is, what does that mean at this point? Because I would think the design is done at this point. What are we talking about? Is there some it's not the setbacks, right?
No, it's about the look of the facades on Morse.
Okay,
and about the pedestrian interaction between
that's
them.
That's fine. I just wanted to make sure it had nothing to do with setbacks, because I was pretty comfortable with what they've got here.
Mr. Mayor, I have one more comment.
Just one more observation out there. I just make this as an observation. I would not be surprised if during the evaluation of those large oak trees along Morris that a determination is made to have them removed. From my professional opinion, they are in very sorry structural condition. And going forward, I would not be surprised if the final plan. I'm not addressing any of that this evening, but I would not be surprised if in the final plan it comes back and the recommendation from staff is to remove those.
Just on Morse, Tom, or the ones on?
And that's because of the age of the building?
They have at the base. There's large openings in the trunk and whatnot.
So may I suggest that happens whether this building gets built or not? I mean, if those trees need to get addressed,
a couple of them. I'm surprised that don't have.
We don't need them falling
that,
on cars.
That red marks on them now, but I'm going to leave that up to the arborist. I know there's a list of. We have priorities for tree removal and. It's listed several times in here, and I think staff has covered that by saying that the developer will work with staff. I just want to plant that seed right now. I would not be surprised if those are missing from the plan when it comes back to final approval.
But you're talking about right along Morse, or you're talking
yes.
about in the median?
No, right along Morse. The ones that are proposed to be saved on this plan that's before us right now. So I'm just.
I see them.
There, and they're. Every time we take a tree down, it gets attention, and I haven't looked at those. It wouldn't surprise me.
So our arborist has not yet looked at these? I thought she had.
Well, at this point, the plan is to preserve the trees.
Right,
I mean,
so
but
she's
if
looked
we,
at them.
As they get further on, if they discover things, then we'll deal with it.
So I have two questions.
Sure.
All right, first of all, do we have any idea whether or not traffic has gotten heavier on Harper recently,
than in the past, or do we care? And is that what's going to happen here? Is Harper going to become much more used as a result of all of this, right?
Sure it will.
Okay, so I just want us to keep that in mind. I was actually driving down this road the other day, and somehow or another people are not understanding this intersection because we had a green light and the lady just stopped in front of me. She just decided not to go through.
Harper and Morse.
Yeah, I don't. Well, there's not a light there, but the light, yeah, at Morse and 1792. It was very interesting to me. So there's still something not exactly computing with some people on that intersection. All right, the other thing that I want to make sure that we're clear on, and for people who might be listening, so this is coming before us, but it meets all the guidelines. We're not making any exceptions to anything, correct? This is already meets code. It's all set. So when somebody says you approved it because we really pretty much don't have a choice in that, do we? Approving it, it's conditional use. Well, you have a conditional use, but you can't take that. You can't. I mean, this meets all the codes.
It meets entirely.
Right?
It does. You have certain standards that apply because of the size of the project.
Right?
It requires a conditional use permit. So, therefore, certain standards can be applied, and they're called conditions. And those, the 10 were recommended by the Planning Commission. You have the right to add, delete, change,
right,
modify.
Okay.
I would move for approval with the Planning and Zoning Commission's comments.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion on the table. I'm going to give the developer the right or the applicant the right to speak, and then obviously the time for rebuttal. Ms. Parker, everybody will have their chance to speak. So, yeah, I was, because you were waving at me. You were waving to speak.
Hi, Mayor, Commissioners. Good to see the staff tonight. I'll try to make it brief. There we go. So as you know, we originally had a more dense project here. We eliminated all the second, third, and fourth story on this project. What we're going for now is, I guess the best way you could interpret it is a Rodeo Drive meets a Worth Avenue. We want to do something maintaining a cool feel to it with a little bit of history, but bring modernization into it. So I've challenged my architects to do that. And that's the start of the design. It's certainly not the finish of the design, but it's going to be a pretty neat project when we're done with it. These are just photos. And to bring up, and I may talk a little bit out of order, but the Morris Boulevard trees, we actually wanted to try to save those trees. And so we'll have an arborist look at those because we're going to have outdoor dining there. And we thought how cool to have the oak trees, you know, creating a great place to eat underneath there. So we're going to try to save them. If they come back that they're deteriorated, we can figure out how to remove those trees. Just more images of the type of feel we're trying to create with fountains and art, et cetera, for the project, outdoor dining. And then the two buildings, when you come in, yes, it's true, there's a restaurant on the corner left and right as you come in. I'll address that again in a minute. The parking garage, we're designing at Finfrock, who's done a lot of your garages here in the city. He's working with us now, and we're going to work closely with staff to make sure it is the most friendly type of garage, most functional type of garage, and fits in with the aesthetics of Winter Park. If I got a laser pointer on this or not.
Chuck, I missed the name of the company.
Finfrock? I don't know if this points. It doesn't point. Okay, so the circle when you come in, Commissioner Leary, to address your concern, I would ask you not to put a condition that prohibits us from doing drop-off there. What I would say is that after we're open for 60 days, that in the event that there is causing a traffic backup on 1792 due to drop-offs, then a condition would be applied that would not allow drop-offs. And I say that for the reason you brought up, the rain, et cetera. If we do have three entrance points into this project, and when it does rain, I think that would be an ideal place to drop somebody off. And if it's not causing a problem on 1792, why wouldn't we do it? If it does cause a problem, certainly I understand that. We don't want to cause a backup on 1792. But the center entrance is designed aesthetically to have the fountain in the center with a drive-through there. It goes directly into the garage. So when you pull in, you go into the garage. We just wanted to make something special there. So that's why you see the brickwork. That's why you see the fountain. That's why you see the landscaping adorning the sides of it. The garage is is, like I said, we're going to make it as functional as we can, as user-friendly as possible. FinFrock's already had some recommendations, but I talked to staff on that, and we're going to deal with those recommendations when we come back through for the final design. It does meet all your codes. I would ask you about the islands. Yes, P&Z said do not. I think I asked for the variance, Jeff, and correct me if I'm wrong, to go from 10-foot to 6-foot on the islands.
They're 9 feet versus 12 is what they're supposed to
be. Yeah, so we asked to decrease them by 3 feet, from 12 feet to go to 9, and I offered to double the caliper of trees in them. The 12-foot width does not get me a bigger tree than the 9-foot. I can put the exact same size tree in either island. The reason I asked for the 9-foot instead of the 12 is I pick up 4 more parking spaces. It may not sound like a lot. 4 parking spaces is very valuable, and it helps the project out to have the additional parking. And I would double the size of the trees that are required in those islands, so we don't feel like we gave something up. And those are going to be oak trees. So the 3-foot doesn't really gain you anything. The 3-foot gains us 4 parking spaces. So I would do the trade-off in offering the larger landscaping. As staff said, we meet all codes on this. And that's really it. It'll be a great-looking project. Our one goal for this project, if aside from being a beautiful project and being something that the city's proud of and we're proud of as the developer, is that we don't hear parking complaints. So we're really going to look hard at that. And Commissioner McMacken, to address your concern on the parking, the 40 parking spaces that we provided extra, remind you, first of all, it's double that what we required. We required 20, and then Commissioner Leary asked for 40, so we did. That 40 does not come into any calculation for this project at all. I'm not getting any extra square footage. I'm not getting any extra seats. Those parking spaces are in there. I do not want to make them reserved, because what happens is you reserve those, and then they go, the people who they're reserved for go park in the most convenient spaces. Then you see the reserved empty. It really is whoever finds the space. And what we always ask the employees to do, whether it's across the street or on this project, we try to require them to the best of our ability to park on the highest floor. That way it leaves the lower floors more convenient parking for the pedestrians. And we ask the managers of the restaurants to patrol that with their staff. And we'll certainly do that here. And we do it on our other projects as well.
So, Chuck, does that mean you won't have those spots reserved for another tenant? Keep them all open? All the spots are open? None will be reserved?
No, we don't plan on having any reserve spots here. I'm a proponent against reserve parking, because I've done it on projects before and found it to be a failure. To give you an example, I built a big project in Virginia, and the top floor was reserved for residents. Well, the residents always, it would snow, it would get cold, it would rain. So they would always park on the second floor, or the employees would. And then the only place people could park are on the top floor. Well, those were reserved. And then the first and second. So we would go out there and see the first and second floor full, and nobody parked on the third floor because they were reserved for employees. So we had to take it off, and then all of a sudden it filled up and worked the way it was supposed to. So we built dozens of these projects like this and just found that to be the most successful way to do it.
Commissioner Cooper.
Chuck, I've actually visited DeLaggio numerous times. We go down there for dinner. And what I notice is that the parking garage that you have there is seldom filled. But I don't know if this is the valet, if this is an operational issue, but the valet are actually parking up on the little bit of landscape up abutting the buildings and under the arches where the pedestrians walk. So I don't know what kind of management operational issue that is, but I'd sure like not to see it happen here. You don't even have to comment on it. I just see that when I go down there often.
Well, let me address that for you. At DeLaggio, much like Winter Park, the residences can afford to valet park, and they all prefer to. And the valets, they don't park in the landscape. They park in the areas on or about their landscape.
It's just amazing.
But they park up there because people want their cars very quick, and they prefer to valet park, and they don't mind giving them the $3 or $5 to do it. So that's something that works itself out in the project, and you see how your guests are coming. But then, once again, the people who don't want to pay a couple dollars to valet park certainly use the garage. So it is something to manage on the site.
The valets couldn't be persuaded to use the garage also.
It's very difficult to get that done.
It doesn't look
good,
even for DeLaggio, and that's a nice area. It's beautiful. But that's when you see that, it doesn't feel quite as nice as it could.
Well, I go there a lot, and everybody always wants their car parked up front.
Right, of course. Of course. Well, I'm very pleased with this. Thank you.
Commissioner,
thank you.
You mentioned that during the Trader Joe's, too, and I think it is a concern, so I second that.
I've got lots of photographs from down there.
I think you actually brought photographs.
Yeah, I probably did. So
well, there's no opportunity for that to happen here, so.
But you can.
And it hasn't happened at Trader Joe's?
No, Trader Joe's is managed very well.
No, it hasn't.
Any other questions?
Other questions? You'll have the right to rebut.
Thank you all.
Okay, further commission discussion, questions of staff? Open the floor for public comment. Citizens wishing to speak to this matter are welcome to.
Joe Terranova, 151 North Park Avenue. I'd like to make a general comment first and then several specific comments with regard to the project. My general comment is I'm very disappointed with what's being presented here this evening. I attended the first meeting that the Unicorp had on this project at the Civic Center, and there were a number of people there to look at the project as it was presented at that time. And I think it was a general agreement, and I certainly was one of the ones in that agreement, that the project was a little bit on the big side. But there were a lot of comments. I thought that they were well made, good criticism. And I also thought that the developer did his best to take those comments into consideration when he came up with his second design, which was called, I think, the Lux. I thought that was a good project. I thought that it would require a change in zoning from C3 to PD1, but it would have been a good project for Winter Park. What we have here, it's a nice design. The people that the same people who did Trader Joe's, but it's a strip mall. It doesn't add anything to the character of Winter Park. It doesn't do anything for 1792. It's same old, same old. It just looks like it will look like another strip mall along 1792, and that's very discouraging to me. But you all think about that. I know where you are on this right now. As far as a specific proposal that's in front of you, I would like to be sure that all the power lines surrounding the Harper, Morse, 1792 and that little side street, all of that goes underground. And I would like very much to see that you have a developer's agreement that covers all of your agreements with the developer. I was a little bit concerned about what happened over at the Trader Joe's project. I think there was some verbal misunderstanding with regard to certain things that would have been done. So I think it's very important that whatever we come up with in terms of agreement that we include it in the developer's agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Gary Barker. I apologize for my voice. I've got allergies or pneumonia or flu or something. I don't know. So for those of us who shook your hand, sorry. 1029 McKean Circle, Winter Park, Florida. I just want to say thank you, Mr. Whittle, because from the first proposal, I have to disagree with Mr. Turnover, but from the first proposal to where we are now is, in my opinion, a reaction or a hearing of what the citizens were asking for and what they were opposed to. And I think this new project fits in well with the community. And I have a couple of questions. Can you put the site plan back up? Whoever's doing that. Where are the islands that you're talking about? I don't know what that... The 12-9.
They're under those trees.
They're in the surface
parking lot. The trees.
Thank you. Okay, good. Second thing, in the packet for this meeting, it talks about 74 extra spaces and the variance that was going to be needed, and nobody has discussed that, but that's in the packet.
At planning and zoning, the applicant had talked about a desire to add 75 spaces, wanted to have half of those be public, half of those go towards additional restaurant seating. Of course, that's something that was not advertised for P&Z, is not advertised for tonight. So we wanted to make the commission aware of that. It's in the minutes and gave them some more background on how it could happen or not could happen, because it's going to need some sort of code change, some sort of ordinance. So we didn't want the commission to be blindsided, but that's something that's not teed up for tonight and have to come up at a later time.
Okay, because I just wanted to address that, and that was the initial point of what I was going to talk about. I've got a son. I think all of you might have children. But when he was little, he would ask for two cookies, and I would say, okay. And he would say, can I have a third cookie? And I would go, no. And he would do that until finally, after a few years, he realized if he asked for two cookies, that's what he was going to get. And what we're looking at here, if the extra 74 spaces are asked for, is asking for that third cookie. And that's the problem that I've had all along with P&Z and with the City Commission, is developers come in here, and instead of building to what the current codes and regulations are, they always push the limit, and you guys eventually always approve the variances. And not always, but I think most of the time approve the variances. And this is a case of where I think that does not need to happen. This, as proposed, looks great to public or private spaces. Mr. Leary's already addressed, and Mr. Whittle's already addressed. You can't do that. So basically, the developer's asking for 74 extra spaces and would require variance to do that. So I'm speaking against that when that comes up, if it ever comes up. And I'm speaking in favor of this. I think this is a wonderful compromise, and I think it's going to add to that corner and to Winter Park. Thanks for having the talk.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to speak to us? Going once. Chuck, I'm going to keep the floor open. I'm going to give you a chance to rebut everything, so, but not in between each one, if you don't mind. Any other citizens wishing to speak to us? Close the floor for public comment. You have the opportunity to rebut, and I'd like to be able to use the Elmo.
A couple things to address your comments, sir. On Lakeside, Trader Joe's, we did every single thing we said. There was not one thing that we didn't do that we said. So when we say there's a few things that he didn't do that he said, there's not one. We did everything we said. So I just want to make the record clear on that. As far as the 74 parking spaces, it is something I talked to staff about. And it is something that we're not trying to get a third cookie. What we're actually trying to do is the reason I sat down with Dory and Jeff and they explained procedure to me, because I wanted to bring this in front of you tonight and it wasn't proper, is that we're trying to figure out how to make the project the best friendly project for the community. And there's costs associated with that. It's just not free. 74 spaces aren't free. It's not, here's $2 million. It just, you know, so we're trying to figure out a way to do that to make it better. To address your comments on the previous plan, you have a broken issue with PDs in the city, and you've got a visioning process you're trying to fix it with. We loved our previous plan. We thought it was great. The city doesn't know what it wants, and the city's trying to figure out what it wants, but you know, we've got a $8 million piece of property sitting here closed that we've got to build on, and we wish we could get through that process. We struggled with your staff really, really hard trying to figure out how to get this done, and we wanted to do something a little bit more special than what we're doing, but that process, and I'll say it publicly, it's got to be fixed. You should have a PD in Winter Park. You should allow your staff the ability to be able to set a code up where they can figure out what makes sense on a property. That's why you hire these professionals. And you got to give them the latitude to do that. And you don't have that right now. So you're going to continue to get projects that really aren't what they could be. Now, with our project, it's not a glorified strip center. It's a super, super glorified, very, very nice retail entertainment project that will have the highest upscale architectural standards that you have in the city. I think we proved that across the street with Lakeside. Across the front of the property, you know, just like I did at Lakeside, our light fixtures are going to be custom made out of Spain. It's going to be beautiful. We're doing trees probably triple the size that are required. We're going to do raised planters, fountains, artwork. It's going to be beautiful. So I can tell you it'll be a great looking project. But what it won't be is it won't be a project where people are going to complain about the parking. So we're going to spend a lot of time to try to make that right and figure out how to pay for it. And so when I come back up, I don't want to be told, you asked for a third cookie. I'm going to come up and tell you why we came up with a revised plan and why it works and why it makes sense. And let you guys decide if your phone should ring or not, that you didn't let them do something that would have made the project better. But that's not the right time or place to do it tonight. I've already been told that with staff. It's got to be done through proper channels, and we will bring it back through the proper channels when the time is right. But I ask you to approve the project tonight. I ask you to approve the slightly smaller islands that'll put doubles the size trees, and so I get a few more parking spaces. And I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like the Elmo, please, and Chuck, you're able to rebut my comments if you'd like to.
The process that we've gone through is feeling a little bit like Goldilocks. This was too hot, and frankly, this is too cold. So let's look at, because the question before us and before me as a voting member is what should we permit? So let me begin by looking at this. Let's look at what's there today. What's there today is a 3.5-acre site, zone C3. Interestingly enough, square footage of 92,350 square feet on the site today. So I asked Jeff this question. If the Mount Vernon burned today, would they have been able to rebuild it back in its current state?
we have, in order to, so that everyone can get insurance, yes, we allow people to rebuild even when they're non-conforming.
But it wouldn't have conformed to our codes, correct?
But if they'd voluntarily demolished, your point is correct.
It wouldn't. So, and we get approximately $14,000 a year off of the Mount Vernon the way it is. This is what we're getting now, folks. We're actually getting a project that's 24,000 square feet less than our current property, and I'm assuming there's going to be value associated with that. I'm assuming it's going to be worth more because the land purchased went up, so we're going to be getting more money than we have today. But we're not even getting what we have had for 50—well, pardon me, it was built in 1949, I think, if I looked at the records. So even from the current period, we're not even getting what we want. So interestingly enough, and it goes back to the point that Chuck made, you know, if Chuck gave us 0.58 acres, which is approximately worth $1.2 million, and he could apply in our codes for a PD1, he could build 169,000 square feet on this property, which all of us would say is much too much. I share Mayor Terranova's point. This is now cold. I'll vote for it because it's been asked for, but our process and our ordinances have led us to something that isn't just right. It isn't just right. And frankly, I'm very, very disappointed because ultimately who loses in this is the taxpayers of Winter Park. That's who ultimately loses. When we don't come up with the right, and there's a zone that could be too far over one side and too far under, but when we don't look at prime property that's going to be with us for 40 years in this state and we don't maximize that usage, we've done something wrong. And we've, in my opinion, are about to do something wrong for the citizens of Winter Park in terms of taxpayers, because this project could be so much more. I'll give you, as the chair, if you'd like to rebut. Great.
Clerk, I'll let you pass this out to the commission.
Sorry. Oops, that's okay. Thanks.
I'm going to move an amendment that allows additional 24,000 square feet for the project, which permits at least to the current space that we have from the Mount Vernon. Is there a second? That fails for lack of a second. Okay, further commission discussion?
No, sir.
Clerk, read the roll.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Brown?
Yes. Mr. Ack, you wanted to make a report, and then we're going to go to the city commission reports.
Yes, sir. At the last meeting, I mentioned to the commission that SunRail was interested in running during the art festival, but they wanted us to pay the full freight of that. They have come back and offered it. First of all, they got the price down to $32,000 instead of $40,000, and they've offered to find a sponsor to pay for half of that. I just wondered if the commission would be willing. We need to bring this formally before the CRA agency. But
Do you have the right to spend $50,000 of our money?
I can go up to $75,000. But since the commission said last time, let's don't do this, I thought I'd at least ask. If we worked with the chamber and the art festival and came up with a way to cover that $16,000 with the city, maybe a not-to-exceed $10,000 number, would it be something that would be of interest to the commission? Again, it'd come back to you for formal approval. I just want to know whether to go forward and work on some partnerships there to cover part of the other amount.
Randy, would be for, they run already on Fridays.
That's correct, Saturday and Sunday.
And there is, we do keep track of how many people come and go from that.
Is it 10,000 a day or 10,000?
No,
it's
32,000 to cover both days, so $16,000 a day total,
and then something and less if we can find a sponsor.
And they're going to get a sponsor for half of that amount.
So $16,000 max.
Right.
I'd love to see you move forward on that.
And I don't have a problem with it. I do want to know how many people actually use it.
Yeah, I'd like to do some metrics to see if.
I mean, part of this is because we need to be encouraging all of the forms of transportation anyways. And I might have liked to have had this on a different weekend when you didn't already have 500,000 people here anyways.
Right.
And I had hoped that we could have worked something out that said, hey, let's pick another time of year when we could be doing this, but I don't mind running this experiment just to say, yes, they ought to be, if nothing more, to point out to the powers that be that, yes, we ought to be running this on weekends.
That's
anyways.
A great idea. Is there a way to track from an economic perspective as opposed to just a bunch of how many people come and how many people go?
Well, it's going to be extremely challenging because you don't know, let's say 20,000 people ride it.
But we can
we
tell
don't know if, where they spent their money.
We can tell if they do better, significantly better than normal, or but we really can't tell.
Yeah.
So there's no way to know whether it's
that's one of the
cost
reasons,
beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do it on an off weekend from the
so
Arts
we could
Festival.
Tell.
You could see the fossil.
I bet they would do that another weekend, too. If we were willing to put up $16,000 another time.
Well, we got to start. You know, part of it is we got to start somewhere. And if we can even whittle that 16 down a little more with some sponsorships or whatnot, I would certainly nod my head and say I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Great idea.
You have my support, Mr. Knight. I think it's
all right. Thank you.
And I think the weekend we need it is when we have the Arts Festival. I don't know that we need it on any other given Sunday. If 500,000 people are coming to our city,
possible. So I've mentioned this to the city manager, and I'd like to, again, it's a certain individual, but I think it paints a bigger picture in the community. I don't think parents know what they can and cannot do and how to report and how to watch over and how to best protect their children. A lot of them, as I said, feel totally powerless that this person's popping up on Facebook and they're getting emails about them, yet he still seems to be out in the community. So I'm not sure what we have to do as a community. I'm not sure what we have to do as a city and as a police force. But he's been seen at St. Margaret Mary, at Park Mainland, the Montessori School, too. So it is not just our problem. It is a regional problem. And I ask for maybe some direction, some assistance to try to pull together something to maybe brief the community and get parents empowered. And so I'm not sure exactly what I'm asking for, except to say I do think we need to take this incredibly serious and perhaps engage the police force and neighboring communities to maybe we do a community forum. And I'm happy to take suggestions on how to do that. And I think
I actually think probably it's best, Steve, to leave that to the police department, maybe through our neighborhood associations. They have Neighborhood Watch, which is a pretty well-structured organization. I know they reach out to those people all the time.
But they're not at schools. The neighborhoods and watches are not at schools.
No, but they are the parents, if that's your concern. I don't know that taking it, removing it out of the hands of the police and starting to make it
Commissioner, I'm not suggesting
it's
that.
One person.
I'm not suggesting problem. Taking it out of the hands of the police. I'm
I
asking
keep the, it kind of
I want the police to work with the community to inform parents as to what they can do to protect
right.
their
and
children.
And I imagine they're. I hope that they are doing that through neighborhood associations, through the schools. I'm not sure that that's the sort of thing we do in a community forum. I don't believe we have made that choice in the past. Our police department is pretty capable. I understand what you're
very
concerned
capable.
About. I think there are processes and channels that we handle that now. I'd hate to.
Commissioner, our parents are feeling powerless.
Commissioner, I'm sure you're aware of this, but the Orange County School District certainly has security plans and policies and protocols. I do not know whether there are interlocal agreements between the various cities, including not limited to the city of Winter Park and the school district. But I know
these are also private schools I'm talking about.
I understand.
But doesn't the law apply to private schools just like it does public schools?
Absolutely. Well, depending upon the nature of the predation and the nature of this individual, certainly. And that's where you can get the involvement of law enforcement.
Because there's so many yards they can't go and be in. Okay.
Well, there's a state standard.
This is crazy, but can they put up a picketing ordinance? Because you can't be within 50 feet if they say they can't.
Well, they already have that. It's already law. I mean, it's already
there. Maybe Brett can tell us what is
it. Well, I mean, our own ordinance, we created that, so I voted against it.
The state has that in place.
What I can share with you is what actions we have taken in regard to this particular individual. Fortunately, in Winter Park, this is a unique situation, specifically with this particular individual. He was arrested by our agency. He was also arrested by Maitland. And once he goes to trial on those issues, then I think the issue will resolve itself with him. What we've done is we have notified the parents of St. Margaret Mary. We've notified parents of other schools with information, pictures of the person that was the suspect. And outside of that, we're happy to work with anybody to educate parents about what they can and can't do. We do it through the PTAs at other schools, and we'll be happy to work with anyone under any of those circumstances to help resolve and alleviate any concerns that they may have.
So, to that, I'm wondering if we can hold some type of, again, it is parents feeling absolutely powerless. They get these reports, they get the emails, and they have no idea what's going on. And it's great. They have gotten the emails that said, watch out for this guy. But as far as they're just, I think there needs to be better communication. I know you guys are doing it, and, you know, I have full faith in the force. I'm not saying it's a your issue. I'm saying it's a how do we educate and how do we empower our parents to help you and to help get the word out. Because, again, it's really frustrating for these guys, for parents. It's the worst thing you can think about is your child's not safe. So I'm concerned about that, and I want to make sure. And I don't know whether it is a forum or whether we talk to the PTAs or the principals of each of these individual schools and just call them together and say, maybe we have a forum and just say, this is what you can do to help us.
We did have a meeting set up with the St. Margaret Mary, but that was canceled, and we stand ready to meet with them. Okay. We provided the flyers to the school and the information that needed to be passed out. But as I said, we'll be happy to do anything to make our parents feel more empowered. And if that simply means meeting with them and saying, you got to call us, we can't be everywhere all the time. And when they spot this individual, it is this individual that we're talking about, we need to know about it because we'll come and take the appropriate action.
Well, then what I'd like to do is, if I'm happy to, I don't know if I need support up here, is to work with the chief to try to schedule some kind of community forum where we invite the school, some representatives from the schools and possibly parents to at least better understand the process and what can and cannot be done and how they can help you. Do I need
Steve, would you be comfortable just allowing the police department to move forward and do that? I don't think
sure. Oh, I was just going to help coordinate just because I know a lot of the principals. So I'm happy to turn it over to the police department to do that.
I think that probably is a good idea. But I do think you need to call people together because that is a horrible feeling.
It's a powerless.
And we've had those feelings in the past when it was internet abuse that focused on our children. I mean, there are a lot of... That's very concerning, and it is very frustrating for parents. But I also don't want to create fear where it may not be necessary. So I don't know what can be done, but you do. And I think what I hear the commissioner saying is, we want you to do it.
and I will be happy to coordinate a group of principals getting together, and I can bring the school board into that. We've contacted them individually, but not as a group. And if that would help get the message out, then I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. That's what I'd like.
Commissioner Larry, I just want this, the commission to know, and you to know, and the chief already understands this, is that the state statutes and the regulations that we have enacted and codified, it's not just schools, but it's parks and other areas where kids are. Exactly. So really it's a matter of community involvement. That's been my experience. Getting the information out there about these sexual predators to let the community understand that these are areas that are just no-nos. And if they can learn to be a little bit more on guard about these particular areas and know that there's a state statute and a city ordinance behind them to enforce and to protect their children.
Great. Other comments?
None, sir. Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Sprinkle?
And I thought that the notice we got about the chief and the action that happened with a student over at Rollins was very commendable. I know that's been really hard for the students at Rollins because he was a great kid, and my son announces the Rollins lacrosse game. So it was very, very sad, but it's so much nicer to have somebody like the chief who's willing to pick up kids and take them and do all the things that a small town police department can sometimes do. So once again, you rose to the top. I wanted to say that I've been taken to task on Bright House recently, so I wanted to see if you could give us an explanation at some point forthcoming about the relationship the city has with Bright House and how that, if ever, gets changed and things like that. I don't know. I just really want to know for education.
I can quickly address that now.
Please do.
Bright House basically has a franchise,
right,
but it's not exclusive. Any cable provider could come in and provide. The problem and the challenge is Bright House has the infrastructure. And so it's cost prohibitive for another competitor of Bright House to come in here and duplicate infrastructure to provide the services. So their real only competition is the phone companies and the DirecTVs and Dish Networks of the world. So
it's not our job to support that. Our job is to provide the ability for whoever wants to get into that position to do it. And we
right.
don't have a monopoly with one company.
That's correct.
We don't have an agreement with one company.
That's correct.
It's wide open now.
It's open, but it's cost prohibitive because say Comcast wanted to come in and provide service,
right,
they'd have to know they got a critical mass of customers that are going to sign up for them to invest in that, or they have to rent fiber from someone else.
Right.
Well, so Randy, as you're laying, I understand about the with our electric utility laying conduit for electric transmission,
right,
we're laying a third conduit or second conduit, however many conduits it is, for cable delivery service. Is that conduit our conduit?
Yeah, I'll let Jerry address how we do that.
Commissioner, we are installing a conduit only in those places where on our existing pole lines there is an overhead telecommunications cable, and the company requests that we do it, and we are reimbursed to do it. So we are not putting in an extra conduit just as a routine. It does not belong to us. It would, in this case, be Bright House, and we only do that if there is an existing overhead cable there.
Pay us? Is that what you said?
Yes, ma'am, they do. They pay us to put the conduit underground to replace the overhead cable, which will have to come down.
Cable to the house or cable?
Up and down the street.
And what does it cost, Jerry, per square foot to lay an extra conduit?
It's per linear foot, and I don't remember the incremental cost right offhand. It's in our contract.
We can get that information to you. It's and we have places like up temple, you know, in different places connecting our facilities with fiber where we put in extra conduit for city purposes.
Right.
It is something we could do as we go do undergrounding. Without a buyer of that conduit, it's obviously an extra cost. So we'll get you what that incremental cost would be.
It's just interesting. I mean, whether we run fiber optic ourselves or whether we sell that conduit or lease that conduit to someone else.
We came at it from this point of view. They have an agreement with us
yeah.
to attach their overhead cables to our poles, and they pay a rental rate for that. And so if we're in a program of putting our wires underground or taking the poles down, then we're going
to
be in that awful place someday
at
saying,
default. Yeah.
You got to take your conductors down.
Sure.
And so we felt like the best strategy was to, in advance, say we're putting this section of wires underground and we're willing to do it for them at our cost. And they give us the design and we install the necessary conduit.
And so the conduit, once they pay us for the conduit, is the conduit theirs?
Yes.
It is.
And so could another company do the same thing?
Yes, ma'am.
And we could have an agreement with someone else if they chose to. They would
yes.
have to step up to the plate, though, and do so.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So the reason this is all important to me is that at some point I'd love for our entire city to have Wi-Fi. And I don't know how we go about that. I don't mm-hmm. know if there's any three nods for us to look at that at some point. But if there is, I'd love for us to have the ability to be the first city in the state of Florida to have Wi-Fi. We're the first in lots of things. But I'd love to have that is something that we could look at.
Commissioner, you have my support in a way there. I think where I am with you is I would love to have high-speed access. I don't know whether that's Wi-Fi, especially in a city that's covered in trees. It's very difficult to do that, especially as we're taking down poles and those access points that we would normally host that. But that doesn't mean we can't have high-speed access by laying fiber optic cable, and it may make sense to do it right now as we're laying conduit, just lay another conduit and perhaps run cable through there. I know people that know a lot more about this than I do. It would be interesting to certainly see, because I'm sure the linear foot incremental cost is not as great.
That's exactly right.
Well,
exactly
we've got everything mobilized, right. Laying down an additional conduit's not that great a cost.
That's not the cost. It's
right.
Everything else.
But if we lay down that conduit and lease it in the future to someone who wants to run some dark cable just to see what happens in the future, maybe interesting to take a peek at. So I would certainly like to look at that cost.
Well, we got a little study going on overhead lights on collector roads. It might be worth us looking at just to see if there's some way we could think about it.
Okay. Anything else, Commissioner?
That's it.
Commissioner Cooper.
Just that the NZN is celebrating their anniversary, I think, this weekend. And I guess we have two candidate forums this next week. So, Steve, you're going to be busy.
Is that all? Seems like we've got about 10.
Could we get you another one?
Yeah.
That's all I can think of right now.
Commissioner Mackin?
Nothing this evening, sir. Thank you.
I have two items. The first is... go ahead.
Are we going to Tallahassee?
Well, you know, I should have brought that up during the conversation of the legislative priorities. They asked me, do we want to come up? And if so, early March or late, given the election, do we want to go up pre-election or after election? Pre-election is best time-wise, getting up there early in the legislative process. So if commissioners want to go, I can circulate something to try to get some dates of what works for our lobbyists as well as the commission. So
I won't be attending. I just won't. If we go early, that's okay. I'm just saying I will not be attending.
Well, I would like for us to go. I know how powerful that was last year, and if we ever think it's not powerful, just look at your budget and look at the quiet zone. So I don't know when you all think the best time to go is, so that's up to other people.
I'd rather have our lobbyists tell us when the best
time is.
When it's most helpful to them.
When do they open? March the 3rd? So, if we waited a second week, that's probably not the end of the world. But I really would like for us to go as a team. I think it sends a good message.
Yeah.
I have two items. I've been approached by citizens as well as also talking with staff and former chairperson, current school board member Joey Cato about the... Is it the ownership, the usage of Showalter Field? So as I understand it, and Randy, you fill in all my blanks here. As I understand it, I don't even know if they pay us, but Showalter Field is used by Winter Park High School, I guess exclusively 12 months out of the year.
Not exclusively.
Or 9 months out of the year or whatever. And as I understand it from parents, that because the school board doesn't own it, they don't invest in it like they would invest in something that they owned.
Yes.
So it kind of feels like we're on a rock and a hard place here. I understand that there's a proposal, and what I would like to seek is three nods to refer a proposal to our Parks Board to study this and staff, obviously, but I think it should go to Parks first to be vetted and bring back us a proposal as what we should or shouldn't do for it. It's my understanding if we owned it, completely owned it. We own it today, but don't have this relationship. There's a way that the school system could still use it for their purposes, but we may be able to get other uses out of it. If we looked at, and I think it would be a good use of city money ultimately, between fundraising and other sources, to potentially turf the field. I know we've talked about turfing a field in Winter Park. I think that's a good idea. When I'm saying AstroTurf, I'm old school, the field turf. Because that could be used for lots of things in our city. The field, the approach to the field and everything we've invested in the last 2 years, and it's really nice, and it's a much improved area. But it's my understanding the actual field and the amenities around the field are rugged. So I don't know if they're not keeping up their side of the lease or if we do this, we're going to have to, as the landlord, come up with a lot of money to keep it up. I'm not sure which, but it feels like we're at a place where it needs to go one way or the other. And I understand that if it was our field, we may be able to get naming rights for it. I heard some pretty remarkable naming right numbers thrown about for fields in Seminole County and other things that are on high school properties. So
it is our field.
It is.
Okay. When you say if it was our field, it is our field.
We own it. They have a long-term lease to operate it and maintain it.
But we can name it.
So they right now maintain it, not us?
They maintain it. That's correct. Okay. They maintain the facilities.
Or not.
Or not.
And it's not happening. So that's why I would defer this to staff and the Parks Board to either if it's not being maintained to the way we want it, then we need to enforce that. And I know that's kind of difficult intergovernmentally.
We've been able to enforce the items that are safety issues.
Yeah.
But we don't have a standard in the lease of how they're going to, you know, the concession stands or the locker room.
I understand our field, Showalter Field, which is City of Winter Park, used by Winter Park High School, is moving into the inferior sections of other fields that they compete on. And I don't think we should tolerate that as a city. I realize it's kind of a joint venture. I don't know what the right word is. We own it, Sarah. You're absolutely right. But the people who we lease it to aren't keeping it up. So at the end of the day, it's our house, and either we're going to end up painting it, and we're going to be doing things and forcing that in lease payments, or we need to come up with a new relationship. So I see two heads nodding. Is there a third head that we ask staff to review this? Any proposals to be vetted at Parks? Does that work, John, potentially? And then really bring back to us, you all, whoever will be here come after March, whatever decisions that are necessary. The other thing is, I mentioned at our last meeting that the Community Advisory Board will have a voting seat on Metroplan. That's actually going to go on Wednesday to the Metroplan Board. And if that's the case right now, it's proposed by Metroplan that would be enacted in the 2015-2016 budget season. So that would give us, and it's right now scheduled to be 1.07 cents per resident, I think, or less than 2 cents a resident. So that is a $2,000 to $3,000 bill, approximately, maybe a little bit more than that, almost $3,000 bill, I guess. And that would be something that they're going to send out interlocal agreements if this passes in the spring, which we would have to execute, and then we'd receive our first bill on October 1st and a second bill in April. And it's my understanding that would give us time to, and give everybody time to get into their budgets, too, if that happens. So it's still, I mean, I've fought hard to get this and think it'd be the best use of $3,000 or $4,000 of our city, especially to say grace over billions of dollars of road, pedestrian, bike paths. And if you don't have a seat at the table, you don't get as much as if you do.
Agreed.
And so, I think you should be commended for getting us back in this place. So thank you.
It required an awful lot of work from a lot of people. And to Steve Leary's point earlier, it's what happens when governments work together. That concludes my comments. Unless there's anything else, I'll seek a motion to adjourn.
You have it.
Thank you. Enjoy your lettuce. Have a good evening, everybody.